WRAF in WRAF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Peter Werby is not in tonight. He'll be back tomorrow. I'm Julian Jordan, his co-host, and I'll be filling in for the next 2 hours right here on Night Call. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. So, let's start. I want to let you know I have a special guest coming in just a little bit. Singer-songwriter Otep Shamaya, one of the few female front persons in heavy metal, and she is the vocalist and namesake of the band Otep, also a political activist. So she should be calling in momentarily. And as well, we have so much to talk about. What a week it was. Healthcare, of course, healthcare and more healthcare. Obama's speech to the nation's schools, we'll talk about that and how that whole frenzied right just kind of fizzled. And let's see, Obama's speech to Congress and Joe Wilson yelling, "You lie, you lie." And let's see, the anniversary of 9/11 just happened as well. Glenn Beck. There's something. I have a whole file on Glenn Beck, let me tell you. Now, let's talk about what happened yesterday. Thousands rallied in the nation's capital to protest big government. A sea of protesters filled the West Lawn of the Capitol, spilled onto the National Mall. It's the largest rally against President Obama since he took office. And it really is a culmination of this summer long season of craziness from the right wing. And they had all kinds of things other than health care that they were shouting about. Gun rights, lower taxes, smaller government. And I'll tell you what, they're not trying to take away your guns. That I can guarantee you. So we don't even need to go there, do we? Let's see. As they sang verse after verse of patriotic hymns like "God Bless America," sharp words of profane and political criticism were aimed at Mr. Obama and Congress. And Dick Armey, former House Republican leader, he helped put this whole thing together along with Glenn Beck and a few other organizations. He pledged a commitment. This is what he said about Obama. He pledged a commitment of fidelity to the United States Constitution, suggesting that Mr. Obama was in violation of what the founding fathers intended the size and scope of the government to be. "Liar, liar, liar, liar," the crowd shouted back, echoing the accusation that Representative Joe Wilson, Republican of South Carolina, hurled at the president 3 days earlier during his address to Congress. And, you know, one thing I noticed is that when we on the left were in Washington protesting against the right, against George Bush and his insane illegal war in Iraq, and of course also now Afghanistan completely out of control these days, we got so little coverage on the mainstream media. And it's amazing to me how much coverage these folks got. But meanwhile, over in Minnesota yesterday, Obama was there. Thousands of roaring supporters turned out Saturday to rally behind President Obama's call to overhaul the nation's health care system, packing a basketball arena here as Mr. Obama warned that nearly half of all Americans under 65 could lose their health insurance at some point during the next decade. He said it can happen to anyone, which is true. About 15,000 people attended the rally there. The applause was thunderous, and he said, "Are you fired up?" And then he also said, at some point, more than one-third will go without coverage for longer than 1 year. So, thoughts on health care and this past week, 313-298-WRIF. Call in. Anyone can call in. And you can always change the subject because there are so many subjects. And let's do talk about Joe Wilson. He was the congressman who yelled, "You lie," during Obama's speech. When Obama mentioned that illegal immigrants will not be covered under this health care proposal that he's proposing, and he yelled, "You lie! You lie!" Well, apparently that hasn't happened since like the 1800s, where someone actually goes right out against the president during a speech to Congress. Pretty crazy stuff. Okay, well, I say we just go to the phone lines and talk to Jeff in Detroit. And, boy, I'm not on this side of the console very often. Hi, Jeff, are you there?
Hey, Jalene, flying solo tonight, huh?
I am. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
Good.
You know, one of the things that I guess that angers me so much is that where were these people at when Bush was spending all this money for the Iraq war and the Afghanistan war,
yeah,
and just running the country right into the ground, and everybody was just cheering them on, go, man, go. And then now you got somebody actually trying to put the country back together, and you, all you can do is complain and do some of the craziest stuff I've seen in my lifetime. I've never seen where people heckled the president.
Right, someone in Congress actually right there during a speech.
Heckled the president. I mean, you know, it would be outrageous if it was a common person on the street during one of the, you know, rallies or something.
Right.
But in Congress, in the House, that's utterly ridiculous.
I know. He apologized, later that night. Of course, he had to, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was not a heartfelt apology. It was like, you know, they're making me do this, so.
Yeah, like, if I must, right?
You know, I'm sorry, yeah, right. But, you know, it's just ridiculous. I think it's just, I think some people are really having a hard time with the fact that we have a black man as the president.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, Peter always talked about the politics of resentment.
Yes.
And I think that has a lot to do with the health care debate, where people are, they don't, you know, as long as I got mine, and I don't care if you don't have yours.
Right. Don't care about anyone but themselves.
You know, and so that the mere thought of, you know, all these people who have no health insurance, well, that's their problem. That's not mine.
Right.
I got mine. But you can't get them to see that theirs is not guaranteed.
That's right.
You know, that the insurance company likes to play the game of, we'll take all your money, and we'll wait till you get sick, and then we'll cut you off.
Right, exactly. And also, how about the fact that we still, and we say it all the time, are the only industrialized, wealthy nation in the world that doesn't have such a system? I mean, these systems are working in France and Germany and Japan and Canada.
You know, that's just a mere quirk, because it's not going to work here in America. I don't know. That's the thing I just can't seem to fathom, that wouldn't it make the country so much better if we had free health care?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least covered health care for everybody.
Right. And even if there's a small
and premium.
And
free education.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, you mean at the collegiate level?
I'm talking all the way to the collegiate level.
Yeah.
You know, and as long, you know, so that a smarter populace, a healthier populace, means that your country can move forward that much more.
Right.
You know, and I don't understand why people, you know, all they can think about is, you know, I just had, just quick thing, I just had an argument, a conversation with a friend yesterday about, you know, talking about how much passing the deficit, you know, this $9 trillion they're talking about or whatever the deficit going to be. And I was telling him, I said, you know, you can't worry about passing on these huge deficits onto, you know, next generations. I said, it would be the same equivalent of, say, somebody in the 1800s, okay, say about 1800 or whatever,
yeah,
and saying we can't build any railroads or factories or things because by the year 2009, the deficit is going to be, you know, $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
It doesn't make any sense. You can, you know, those generations are pretty much glad to take care of problems themselves.
I hear you. You know, on the racism note, and the people who can't cannot handle the fact that there's a black president. This Joe Wilson who yelled, "You lie." Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know this, but in December 2003, remember Essie Mae Washington Williams? She was
Strom Thurmond's illegitimate daughter.
Right, exactly. He said that he didn't believe her. That she is his daughter, and this is what he said at the time. It's a smear image that Thurmond has It's a smear on the image that as a person of high integrity who has been so loyal to the people of South Carolina. Can you believe this? This
oh,
guy,
yeah.
I mean, can you say racist? Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, he's also a member of, what is it, the Sons of the Confederate Veterans?
Oh, yes, he is.
You know, I mean, so obviously this man has some racial issues that he hasn't quite ironed out.
He hasn't, and who knows if he ever will. And you know, at this rally at the Capitol, they were throwing those Confederate flags up left and right, and they want their right. Yeah, he went for it. He wanted it to be, you know, the flag again.
Well,
down south.
You know, the thing is that the people with that kind of attitude, you're never going to change their mind. They're going to have an epiphany in their own heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and until they do, you know, all the information, all the things that they see, you know, they could see 10 million black rose scholars,
right,
and yet still think that all black people are ignorant.
It doesn't,
you're not going to change their mind because it's set, you know, one way, and that's the way it's going to stay.
Yeah, pretty sad stuff. And in this day and age, you would think, come on, can we, you know, move forward, people?
Well, you know, I'm hoping in my heart that we can. You know, but I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, I know. I'm not either. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you for calling in, being our first caller tonight on Night Call.
Okie dokie. You have a good day.
All right. You too. And we will get more of your calls momentarily. 313-298-WRIF is the number. And I want to begin tonight's show, as I had talked about at the top of the hour, with a very special guest. Singer-songwriter Otep Shemaya is one of the few female front persons in heavy metal. She is the vocalist and namesake of the band Otep, heard right here on WRIF on Midnight Metal, and now here on Night Call. Let's listen. That's Otep with Smash the Control Machine. Released last month on Victory Records, Otep Shemaya is also a political activist who speaks out on everything from human rights and animal rights to domestic abuse. Time to now welcome Otep. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. We're all excited to have you here. Welcome. And, you know, let's kind of get the music stuff out of the way, and then let's get to the meat of the politics, which was what I'm all about, right? How is it for you being one of the few females fronting a metal band out there?
I really only have my own perspective, so I don't know what it's like not to be a female fronting.
I hear you.
A rock band, so
yeah.
I wouldn't really know any other way, but I think it's, you know, we have some of the most passionate, talented, and intelligent fans on the planet, and so that is always encouraging and validating in a lot of what we do.
Right, absolutely. And let's talk to your activism. When did activism start for you? I know that's kind of a big general question, but...
I'm sorry, you broke up there.
When would you say that your activism started for you? When did you start being passionate about all these issues? Has it been that way as long as you can remember?
think so. I mean, I guess it probably started when I was a kid watching bullies pick on some of the weaker kids in our neighborhood and standing up for my siblings and then moving on once I started to educate myself on women's rights and our place in history, and that gave me a perspective that was personal. And then, my childhood was sort of full of, you know, a lot of poverty, a lot of violence, and I figured that, you know, I didn't really have anybody that I could turn to, and I just knew that if I could ever be that person for someone else, then I would. And now that I have some sense of celebrity, whatever that is, mm-hmm. how silly that is, but it's part of the game, I realize. So if I'm going to have it, I'm going to use it for something that is worthwhile.
So you feel you're teaching. Do you feel like the audience you have, you're teaching them, or are they already with you politically?
No, I think some are, some aren't. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. Some don't agree with me at all politically.
But they still love you?
That's fine, too. And of course, yeah, that's fine, too. You know, we're not, it's not like you have to support everything that we stand for in order to enjoy the music. And we do. We have people that are absolutely, you know, can't stand the political side. And believe that bands shouldn't be political. Of course, I disagree with them.
Yeah.
But they still enjoy the music. They still come to the shows, and that's fine. You know, the music serves many purposes, I feel lucky to have all of them.
Awesome. And we'll talk about a show that you have coming up here in a little later, but let's touch on some of the causes that are important to you, like PETA. You have become a spokesperson for the people for the ethical treatment of animals, and it's mostly, I think your latest thing was about against the fur industry, right?
That's one of the many, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I became a vegetarian about a year and a half ago. I kind of always had been a reluctant vegetarian, I suppose. Knowing, you know, I'd seen the videos of how the animals were treated and kept and how they lived before they're killed. And I always, you know, just, there was always a sense of guilt about that and a bit of powerlessness and helplessness of what could I do. And then when I realized that that's what PETA was for, it's for the ethical treatment of animals. I decided that, you know, I should get involved and be the change that I was seeking instead of waiting for it to come on its own. And that's what I did. So, you know, it's a terrible thing to think about what, for these careless delights, what we actually do to the creatures we share this planet with. We will skin them alive and throw their bodies on top of other animals that we've skinned alive just so that someone can have a coat that they don't need.
Yeah.
We will keep, you know, beautiful, majestic animals in giant warehouses where they will never see sunlight or breathe fresh air and stand around in their own waste and their own filth for their entire life, just so that we can enjoy a hamburger for a dollar. I encourage people. I know not everyone's going to be a vegetarian. I realize not everyone's going has that discipline or even cares that much about it. But I encourage everyone who, even if they describe themselves as a meatitarian, to at least, you know, focus on organic or free-range food.
Right.
Animals that are allowed to be outside, that are allowed to pretend that they are free for
right.
a little while before we kill them, eat them, digest them, and then expel them an hour later.
Right. I was a vegetarian for 25 years and just started eating meat again a couple of years ago, so I was hoping tonight that you might help me get back into that.
Well, I tell you, you know, I'm not a vegan, so I do eat other things that are created from animals, cheese most notably. And occasionally I'll have scrambled eggs or an omelet. But now, after seeing an undercover video that was floating around Facebook from a hatchery where they process eggs, that some of the eggs hatch, and there's little chicks, and we know how cute little baby chickens are.
Oh, yeah.
We see them every Easter. Well, they were throwing them on a conveyor belt and then grinding them up alive. And I don't know why wouldn't take, you know, why you wouldn't want to put those, let those chicks grow into chickens and then you can have more eggs. It's probably just cheaper just to kill them. So perhaps the owner of that company can go, you know, vacation again in Aruba this year instead of maybe sparing an animal's life or a couple of thousand animals' lives. So now I've decided that I'm not even, you know, I'm going to focus on free range and eggs to make sure that they come from places that take that time, that have that consciousness about them, and that care about what they're doing to, you know, the things we share this planet with.
Right. And let's take a little bit of a switch up in subject and talk about domestic abuse. You're involved with an organization called RAIN?
Indeed.
Yeah. Can you tell us what that stands for again?
It's the Rape, Assault, Incest National Network.
Yeah.
And they have the first 24-hour crisis hotline in the country. It's manned primarily by volunteers, and they offer a solution for people that may have no other place to turn in their own lives or afraid to tell anybody. There's a place you can go, and it's RAINN.org, and you can, you know, you can talk to a counselor, and they can help guide you, you know, emotionally, or even, you know, help you with finding a safe place to go to. I think it's important because when we as Americans will sit around and we'll watch our world news and we'll hear about something terrible that happens to a young girl in another country and we go, oh, those heathens, those barbarians, how could they?
Mm-hmm.
But we forget about what goes on in this country every single day,
right,
every minute of every day. And RAIN is a beacon in that darkness. And, you know, their phrase is, you are not alone. And I think they're just a beautiful organization with a man by caring people who want to make a difference. And I'm proud to be a part of it with them.
Great. So RAINN.org. We'll make sure that gets out there. And, you know, I was setting up this interview, and I really didn't mention this to your people, but I wanted to get your take on this whole craziness with the rabid right wing and healthcare and Obama and the tea parties and Glenn Beck. And what are your thoughts on how crazy it is out there on the right?
Well, yeah.
If you can like nail that down, a few sentences.
Well, it's ridiculous. You know, during the Bush Cheney crime family, when they led us into the illegal invasion of Iraq and took our beloved soldiers and used them for whatever that grudge match or grabbing of oil or whatever it is that we went in there for. If you spoke out against the war, you were treasonous. You were not a patriot. You were anti-American. You hated America. And yet we now see people who, for some reason, and it's usually, it's a lot of it has to do with just being, you know, corporate shills and their corporate plants that are inside these town halls. But for the other people who are going around and saying that they want to secede and that they hate the United States of America, they're given a platform on shows like Glenn Beck's show, who I think is an absolute fraud. When he was on CNN after he had a bad experience, I guess he had surgery and he had a terrible experience with his hospital and the insurance coverage, he went on a crusade against the insurance companies, and he cried out for health care reform when he was on CNN. Now that he's on Fox News, he's doing the other bit, because that's their bit, you know. They they're the party of no. I think that we give too much credence to a lot of these people who have no idea what they're talking about when they're talking about death panels, for example, And these are just, this is basically language in the bill that said that the a doctor would be able to be compensated for speaking to someone about their end-of-life care. What do you want to happen to you after you die? Do you want to stay plugged in? Do you want to be unplugged? What do you want to happen to you? A lot of elderly folks or terminally ill people like to have that conversation. It gives them a bit of control. And all it was basically allowing doctors to be compensated for that. And then, Sarah Phelan Palin and all of her weird constituencies all went off crazy about death panels. Well, guess who put that in the bill? Republicans. Republicans put their quote-unquote death panels in the bill. So the next time Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh or any of these other idiots are out there trying to push the button so that they can get their pockets swollen by the corporate lobbyists that they represent, next time they ask anybody about why we're putting death panels in our health care bills, you tell them to ask the Republicans who put it in.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't Democrats who wanted it in, it was Republicans who wanted it in there, and they're the ones who placed it in language. And for some reason, the media outlets aren't even, they barely brush over that. And that is the quickest, easiest way to stop all that nonsense is just to say, go ask the Republicans. They're the ones who put it in the bill.
Right, absolutely.
That would have been the quickest, easiest thing. And then you see all of these other things where they're calling Obama a socialist, a communist, and a fascist.
Yes.
Well, which is it? You know, those sound scary. You know, they do. They sound terrifying. So we use them a lot because, they remind us of Cuba and the Soviet Union and North Korea and
Venezuela.
Whatever else we think they are. Well, communism, socialism, and fascism they're competing ideologies. You can't be all three. You can't be all three.
Right.
But people like to throw these words around and they like to regurgitate the things that they hear because they're scary. They're terrifying. It's a shame to me that the Obama administration is actually probably trying to do what the office of the presidency is supposed to do, which is not be a Democratic president. He's trying to be the president of the United States, being everyone's president, so he's trying to be the fair father with a bunch of unruly children, you know.
Yeah.
But see, which is, converse to what Bush was, he was Republican president of the United States. He was a Republican. What I think the Obama administration is forgetting is what people voted for. They didn't want just him to be this fair guy who listens. We voted for him to go in and correct the things that the Bush Cheney folks had torn down and were completely destroying. And I want to know where all of these teabag party people and all of these healthcare idiots, where were they when their conservative government was running up the deficit? When they were expanding government to be the largest government on the planet? Conservatives used to like small government, less taxes, and privacy in everyone's lives, you know, your personal lives or your own, unless you're a woman or pregnant.
Right.
But they've ignored all that because they were in power, and power corrupts everyone. So, I think it's just nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And I'll tell you this. People say, well, it's going to give illegal aliens, illegal immigrants,
right,
free health care. We pay for that now. We pay for the uninsured right now. Every time someone goes to the emergency room,
yeah, they're not turned
they don't
away.
Have insurance. We pay for it. Taxpayers pay for it. And I'll tell you this. I'd rather my taxes go to pay for health care for my fellow citizens of the country that I love than to pay for Blackwater and corporate welfare.
Right.
And, until we can reach that sort of strange compromise where we care more about people than we do vengeance and corporations, I think this fight's going to continue. I hope the Obama administration comes to their senses because we have congressional elections are coming up in 2010, and if we lose, if the Democrats lose control of the Congress, they're not going to get anything done in the end of his term. Because if they can't get anything done now, and the Democrats control the Congress, there's absolutely nothing. Because the Republican Party is basically obstructionist. You look at the guy that Congressman Joe Wilson, who screamed out, "You lie," during the president's address. And
yes.
Over basically, the part of the bill that they were talking about was
immigration.
Giving illegal immigrants health care reform. Well, guess what? In 2003, guess what Joe Wilson voted for?
Yeah.
Health care for illegal immigrants. So they're just all hypocrites and obstructionists, and they are truly the party of no. And that's what is so frustrating. And until good people, good, fair-minded, intellectually active people decide to silence these mongrels, then we're going to continue to be battered because the squeaky wheel gets the oil.
Agreed. We're talking with singer-songwriter, political activist Otep Shemaya, and one of the she's the front person for the heavy metal band Otep. We only have a few minutes left. Is there anything else on your agenda that you want to speak to while you're here?
Well, we do have a new record out.
Let's talk about that. Like last month.
It
just came out last month, right?
It did. It came out in August, and we're very proud of it. It's our fourth album. It's called Smash Control Machine. We recorded it in Los Angeles. It took about 2 months, and I think it's probably to write and record. I'm sorry. It took about 2 months to write and record.
But wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. We really poured ourselves into it. I mean, we were there in the studio 6 days a week, about 12 to, you know, I was there personally between 12 to 14 hours a day. But it was a burden of joy, truly, to create this record the way we did, and I think that fans of all three of our records are going to find, because every record we write is different.
Yeah.
But I think they'll find something that they like, because I tried to focus hard on all of the things that I enjoyed about the first three records and bring all of those elements into the fourth album. And I suppose the other thing that I would like to talk about, I guess, would be the Hedrick Martin Institute in New York City, which is home of the Harvey Milk High School.
Oh, yes.
They're an amazing institution, again, volunteer-driven, that provides a safe place for gay and lesbian teens that have either been abandoned or attacked or felt unsafe at their schools for being themselves. Some of these kids are below poverty level. In fact, most of them are. And it provides, you know, art therapy. They provide counseling. They provide job building skills. They teach them, as well as the high school itself. But the institute will even provide hot meals for kids who are, you know, their families are too poor, a place to get clean clothes, a place for a shower. They don't house them, but they help them find a safe place to stay at night if they're runaways or just feel unsafe inside their own homes. It's truly an amazing organization. I met with when we were on tour. I had an opportunity to, when we were in New York City, to go visit the school and to sit with a group of the teens, and it was some of the kids in the art classes, and they were just I looked around the room and in them I saw my own reflection. I could remember being as fearful as they were, as hopeful as they were, as angry as they were, as frustrated as they were, as confused.
Because you're an out lesbian, you're out.
Indeed.
Yes.
Yeah. And I also find that to be a strange place because, when people, and I know it's the common term, so I don't take any offense to it.
Right.
But it is,
it's just what they say on all of your bios,
No, I understand. I'm not saying it's not the word lesbian that bothers me. It's the word out.
Right. Okay. Because why? Should you be any other way, right?
That's my point. Indeed.
Yeah.
I mean, why should I be any other way, or why should we hide it? And I take issue with a lot of my kindred entertainers who there are many who pretend to be straight, and in fact are not. And yet, do it by hiding it from the public. They feel like that protects their careers. It gives them advantages. But then yet, what does that tell others who look up to you, or the kid that, that is living in a small town in a state that looks down upon people that are different? What, and who has going through the worst time of their life emotionally and have no one to turn to, no role models, because now they hate themselves for who they are as well, because you know, no one else is like them. The loneliness, the self-loathing is, you know, overwhelming for them. You know, I again, you know, the Declaration of Independence, our country is built upon the idea that all men, and I'm assuming they mean human.
Yes.
Using the term that way, that all men, well, at the time they wrote it, they didn't mean it this way, but now that's how we interpret it, right? Because at the time
right.
this was written, at the time that we became a country, women did not have the right to vote.
Right.
And we owned slaves in this country. The indigenous people of this land that we basically stole it from because we broke the government broke every single treaty almost that they had with them. So now we have to interpret it that they mean, when they say man, they mean human.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that all humans are created equal. There's no ifs. There's no asterisk. It doesn't say you're created equal if you're Republican, if you're wealthy, if you're white, if you're Christian, you know, if you're straight. It says we are all created equal. Mm-hmm. And until that day, we are not a free nation. Until we can stop judging each other and restricting each other's personal lives based on silly bigotries.
Right.
Then, you know.
Yes.
It we're basically living under a falsehood. We still have not reached our promised capacity, but that's the great thing about America, that it's built on an idea, and then we just have to keep trudging forward, no matter how sloshy or sloppy it gets. We have to keep going forward towards, you know, making that idea a realization.
Oh, I hear you. Thank you so much for that. And let's plug your upcoming show in Pontiac. It's October 15th at the Crowfoot. You're on tour. I imagine you're on tour with this lineup, the Five Finger, Death Punch, Shadows Fall, and Two Cents, and OTEP.
That's right. Yeah, that's us.
Right on. Well, looking forward to the show. I'm going to personally be there and see you guys. I saw you a couple of years ago at the Trick or Freak that WRIF had downtown. And I have to tell you this. Someone came up to me in the bar and said, "Are you that chick singer from OTEP?"
Oh.
I kid you not. I'm blonde and I'm feisty, so that must have been it. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. All right, OTEP Shemaya, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Night Call.
I appreciate you. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. We'll see you next month, all right?
All right. You guys come down. That's
okay.
Great.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much, OTEP Shemaya of the band OTEP. And we'll be back to take your calls. So think about what you want to talk about. Is it health care? I know someone did want to talk about guns. Call back. Be patient. 313-298-WRIF. 313-298-9743.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Hello, how are you? Hey, it's Joe Mike. Have a great weekend. We'll see you first thing Monday when we discuss kickoff weekend in the NFL and see how the Lions did. And also Monday, we'll talk to Julie Chen, who hosts Big Brother, of course, on CBS as they're getting ready to crown their season 11 winner. Also Monday, we'll talk with Eli Roth, creator of Hostel and seen currently in the new Quentin Tarantino Brad Pitt film, Inglourious Basterds. Busy day Monday with Joe Mike at 101 WIF and WIF HD1 Detroit.
Yeah, all right. I'll see you guys there.
Drew and Mike in the morning on 101 WRIF.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
Do you owe taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? What will you do? Your tax problem will only get worse if you don't do something about it. If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Pick up the phone and call 1-800-493-8157. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts for less than you owe. Remove penalties and interest and get the tax collector off your case. As an honest, hard-working American, you do have rights. Don't let your tax problem get worse. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Peter Werby not in tonight. I'm his co-host, Julene Jordan. And let's get that music down. Hey, we have lots to talk about, and we just got done with our interview with Otep Shemaya of the band Otep. I thought that was wonderful to talk to her and to have some like-minded folks, a lot in the music industry, but a lot of the musicians don't take their activism as far as people like Otep does. And I got to tell you, check out their tunes. If you haven't discovered Otep, go to otep.com and definitely go to see the band when they play in October at the Crowfoot in Pontiac. And let's go right to the phones. We will go to Ron in Garden City, who wants to talk about healthcare. Hi, Ron. How are you?
Hello. What's up?
Welcome.
This is Ronnie T.
Hi, Ronnie T.
What's going on?
Not much. What can I do for you tonight?
Yeah, well, you know, I was looking to get in that healthcare conversation.
Sure.
You know, there's a couple things. You know, I'd like to know what people actually thought about it. But it's like, you know, you never hear anybody say, you give everyone free healthcare, there's going to be a huge boom in the healthcare industry. You know, you're going to get construction, you're going to expand buildings.
Right.
There's going to be nurses and you're going to need more doctors.
Even the insurance companies are going to get like 30 million more customers. Really, 47 million people in this country without health insurance.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they don't. I've never heard anyone talk about that.
Yeah, that's true, that it would actually create jobs.
It's going to, you know, it'll create jobs, and it'll be just like, you know, they got the, you know, go green, and, you know, they're trying to do those jobs and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you give free health care to everybody, there's going to be a bunch of jobs in that industry, and that's going to grow.
See, I think that's a great point, Ron. Do you have health insurance?
What's that?
Do you have health insurance?
No, I don't have health insurance. I'm actually unemployed.
Okay.
I'm not even getting unemployment, you know.
Man.
They denied me on my extension. You know, I'm just trying to survive out here.
That's rough, man.
But it's rough, you know. You do whatever it takes, you know.
Yeah, how are you doing it? Do you have help? Do you have a wife with a job?
No, I'm not married. Actually, I got roommates that live in my house.
Great.
I had a couple people move in.
Yeah.
Get the rent a little cheaper for me, you know?
There's a lot of that going around.
Like, exactly. It's like we got three guys about 28 years old living in my house.
Really?
It's like, you know, hey, man, whatever it takes to get through.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
Yeah. Do your roommates have jobs?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're roofers, man. Roofers always work.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's rough.
Yeah.
It's rough work. It's hard work.
Everybody needs a roof, man. It's hard work, you know.
Right. Everyone needs a roof or roof repair, right?
Definitely. But, you know, and another thing, like the marijuana thing.
Sure.
It's like if Michigan just made marijuana legal and taxed it, it would pay for health care just for all of us in Michigan. You know?
Profiting from it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because, well, they got the cars now. You can make it. You can pretty much get a car to smoke it if you really try.
Get a what to smoke it?
Yeah.
Oh, the
for
card.
For a headache, you can get a prescription. You know
a card.
Saying?
I see what you're saying. I thought you said a car.
Yeah,
I was lost. Okay. All right.
Oh, like to get the card, you know?
Yes, the medical marijuana card, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can be a caregiver, all of that.
Well, you know, if they took that a step above that, you know, there's a lot of marijuana going around.
There is a. That's what I hear.
There you go. There's your health care. There's your money for health care.
Ron from Garden City's
more.
Got it all figured out.
Hey, man, it's just, you know, people don't want to talk about it, you know. Like you were saying with the right-wing people, if any Democrat said something about legalizing marijuana, they'd be shot down, burned to the ground.
Well, you know what? We talk about it all the time on this show, so we're okay, right?
That's why I'm calling.
Yeah.
That's why I'm calling, man, you know.
Right on, Ron. But, is this your first time calling the show?
Yeah, definitely.
Well,
first time.
Thanks for calling. We appreciate it. You have a great night.
No problem.
Okay.
Right, you do the same.
Thanks for helping us all figure it all out. And we will go now to Ypsilanti, where Eric is calling. He wants to talk about Joe Wilson, the guy that said you lie.
That's right.
How's it going?
It's going good. How about you?
Excellent, Eric. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, Joe Wilson didn't go far enough. That apology meant it was nothing.
Oh, his apology was nothing. And you know what else he said now is he won't apologize again. He said this morning on Fox News Sunday, I know that's such a surprise, I'm not going to apologize again. I apologized to the president on Wednesday night, and I was advised then that, thank you, now let's get on to a civil discussion of the issues. But I've apologized one time. I think he needs to apologize again and again.
I know, I heard, but I'm not an Obama fan either, but...
But you still thought it was rude for him to do to the president of the United States.
Right.
And very disrespectful.
Yeah, he should have disrespected Bush.
Right. And where were all these people when Bush was jacking that deficit through the roof, through these illegal wars, Iraq, and now look at Afghanistan. It's a complete mess. It's messier than it ever has been.
And we should have.
We should be mad about spending our tax dollars on that, right?
Right. And we should be having a more civil debate with the health care issue.
Yeah. Do you have health insurance, Eric?
No, I don't.
See? Here we go, people. Well, you know what? If things go our way, we will soon.
I know.
All right. Thanks, Eric. Thanks for calling the show. Have a good night. And let's see. Jimmy in Bridgewater. Jimmy.
How are you doing tonight?
Excellent. What do you want to talk about?
Where's your partner in crime tonight?
My partner in crime is not here tonight. He's totally cool. He's taking a night off, but... We'll be back together again next week. I don't like when he's gone, to be honest with you. He puts a lot on me making me do this.
See, you're going to take over.
Is that what it is?
Hey, I'm calling because, you know, you're asking where were all the people at that were talking about Bush.
Oh. You're cutting out a little bit. You said, I was talking about all the people. Where were all these people when Bush was taking that federal deficit through the roof? Oh, you know what? Jim, let's put you back on hold because the connection, not so good. Roger, check in with Jimmy and let me know, and then we'll put him back on hold and we'll get back to him. We had a bad connection. Let's go now all the way to New Mexico. And Chris is calling. Chris, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Julian. How are you?
Excellent. Glad you could call from all the way over there.
All the way over here is closer than you think when you're talking about health insurance. And,
true.
And that colostomy bag, Joe Wilson, and the rest of that witless ilk. Did you see the Million Moron March that
I did.
Happened?
I did. I saw a slideshow of it. And how about, did you see the sign where they said, Barry Obama's health care? With Kennedy?
Yeah.
Can you believe... Now, this is an all-new low. I'm sorry.
You know, what bugs me most about that entire crowd and the arguments going on about it right now are that people are focusing on the overt racism from that crowd. And that's important.
It is.
It really is.
In fact, I'm going to talk to that in a little while.
Honest to goodness, if you looked at that crowd very closely, you understood that if those people were ever really given power, they would be burning books. They would be organizing pogroms. This goes beyond mere racism. This goes to un-Americanism and all that means. Joe Wilson is just sort of a limping symptom of that disease, I think. It's really unfortunate. I we were talking a little earlier about the OTEP Legion. I'm part of the Legion. Are you part of OTEP's Legion?
I'm going to be.
Are you?
Yes, I am. You can go to OTEP.com and be part of the Legion.
You have to contribute a pinky toe. You know that, right?
You do.
Yes.
I kind of fancy my pinky toe.
I imagine you do, but you can give up one for really, really good rock and roll.
And justice?
At least.
I'll think about it.
Take care, Julie.
Is that all you have?
That's all I have for tonight.
That was good enough. I liked it. Thank you, Chris, for calling all the way from Abiquiu, New Mexico. Bye-bye. And let's check in on Jimmy. Jimmy, are you there?
Yeah.
Are we better now?
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay.
I'll tell you, I was out there talking to the Republicrats and the Demopublicans the whole time when Bush was trying to push through all the fascism that he has been trying to do. I'm a Republican briefing delegate, and I try to go to these meetings and tell people, look, you know, Ann Coulter's a whack job.
Yeah.
She might have nice legs, but she's a whack. Did you see that cross she had on last night? Oh, my God.
No, what was it? Like a giant cross?
Yeah, just this giant diamond-encrusted cross. Oh. Nothing a Christian would wear.
Right.
You know,
true,
I mean,
Christian.
Come on. And dressed like a slut, as usual. You know, I mean, come on. Well, she's got nice legs. She's got nice legs. She's a nut.
Who cares about the legs? You know, let's talk about the evil mind.
Exactly. And, you know, and I'm no fan of this particular health care bill, H.R. 3200, but there are some good ideas in it. But the problem is when you start digging into it, there's a lot of, well, let's just say it, fascism.
Yeah.
And that's what's scary. We need to do, there's plenty of things that we can do, like letting people buy insurance across state lines. You can ensure that people do not get cut off just because they have a pre-existing condition. That's a step in the right direction.
Yes.
You know, I totally agree. We can lower some prices. I pay $980 a year for catastrophic medical insurance.
Do you really?
$5,000 deductible. Oh. I don't think that's out of line.
What's your deductible?
$5,000.
Okay.
Yeah, and I can come up with that. And see, and the other thing is that you can make a deal with the hospital to make payments on that. There's plenty of things that you can do. Now, I'm not covered for prescriptions. I'm not covered for office visits. But
see,
I can take that out of my pocket.
But this way, but a lot of people can't. And I know all of them. But, you know, the thing is under this health care plan, then maybe you will be able to get your prescriptions filled because you're going to need them someday.
Believe me, I'm not going on this bill. I'm not going to have anything to do with this. They can pass all
What if it turns out to be the greatest thing? Would you eat your words?
No.
No?
No, because, see, I don't trust the government.
Well, hey, listen, I hear you there. I really do. But, you know, there are so many countries where these health care systems are the best thing for the people. In France, the number one health care system in the world. You can drop your insurance company. Well, listen, you know, that's a whole nother subject that I am highly interested in talking about. But in France, you can drop your insurance company, and get another if you don't like it. The doctor is paid in 3 days, and the person, if there's a copay, is paid within 2 weeks. They don't have to ever pay those. In the end, they get paid back. People like their insurance companies in other countries, in France and Japan and Germany. In Germany, you can choose from over 200 different plans. I mean, things are really good in other countries. And then let's talk about let's talk about the government, okay, Jimmy? Government-run health care. Let's talk about the VA. Let's talk about Medicare. And let's talk about the Native American Health. I think it's the Alliance where Native Americans get health care. This is government-run health care, and it's working.
It's not that great.
Well, it is for them. They would beg to differ.
You know, the VA is all right here in Michigan because we have it in Ann Arbor. And it's right next to the U of M, and it's right next to St. Joe's. And all of those doctors, my father goes there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, that is one of the best ones in the entire country. But you can go to Omaha, go to Austin, Texas.
Mm. Okay, we're losing you again. I'm going to... Oh, you know what? You're cutting out, Jimmy.
Okay.
Real bad, but thanks for calling. We appreciate you calling Night Call tonight. Give a call again, okay? 313-298-WRIF. And we have open lines, so if you would like to chime in on this, do you have health care? What do you think about this whole health care? Really, it's kind of a cluster. You know what I mean? I mean, I really am not convinced that most of the people, the majority of the people, even get it. Even get what's going on. And it takes an incredible amount of research and reading and paying attention to really grasp it. So unless you don't get it, you know, hey, but we can ponder it together here on Night Call. 313-298-WRIF. It's 313-298-9743. We will be right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
You receiving monthly checks from a lawsuit you won? Are you having trouble paying your bills every month because the settlement money you're getting just isn't enough? Well, there is a way you can get the cash you need now in one lump sum payment. For free information to see how much cash you can get, call Peachtree Settlement Funding now at 1-800-978-5459. Find out how you can turn your future structured settlement payments into the cash you need now to get free of your credit card debt, to meet your rising mortgage payments, to pay your medical bills and other expenses. If you're receiving payments from a lawsuit, call Peachtree Settlement Funding. For your free information, call now 1-800-978-5459. You have bills piling up that need to be paid now, so why wait any longer? Get the future money you have coming to you now when you need it most. For your free information, call Peachtree Settlement Funding now at 1-800-978-5459. That's 1-800-978-5459. 1-800-978-5459.
There's something happening across America. People aren't just calling themselves DirecTV customers. They're calling themselves fans. That's because DirecTV has exclusive sports packages like NFL Sunday Ticket and free NASCAR Hot Pass. DirecTV has the most HD channels with over 130, soon to be over 200, and 50 times more movies available in 1080p. Perhaps that's why DirecTV is ranked number one in customer satisfaction among all TV service providers. So don't just watch TV. Become a huge fan. Switch to DirecTV today. Call 1-888-359-5566. There's no equipment to buy and no startup costs. Packages start at just $29.99 a month. Call 1-888-359-5566. That's 1-888-359-5566. Sports subscriptions sold separately. New customers only on approved credit. Credit card required except Massachusetts and Pennsylvania. Hardware lease and programming commitment required and available separately. Other conditions apply. Call for details.
101 WRIF in WRIF HD1 Detroit.
I want to hear some revolution out there! I want to hear some revolution! Show the resistance! It's time to testify! I want to know! Are you ready to testify? Are you ready? I give you!
Peter and Julie, you're listening to Night Call, the Rift award-winning talk show on 101 WRIF.
Thank you very much. Peter Werby off tonight. I am Julian Jordan. I'm his co-host, and I am doing this thing all alone tonight, but not all alone because you're out there. 313-298-WRIF, 313-298-9743. I'll be taking your calls all the way up until 1 o'clock a.m. when Peter has a couple of great interviews, and both of them about movies. So I'll let you guess. You know it has to have some kind of a political twist. Now, I found this. I'm going to get to your phone calls in 1 minute, but first I want to play this. It's a parody. It's not real, but it's called The Angry Right-Wing Mother, and here it is.
President's plan to speak to school kids on Tuesday has some conservative parents saying he's trying to brainwash their kids into buying his politics.
I'm thinking about my kids. I'm sorry. Having to listen to that, it just really upsets me. Obama says he wants kids to study hard, which we all know is a slippery slope to becoming a Nazi. And that one day he wants to create this place where kids can go and check out books for free.
For free?
It's socialism. Well, I am not going to sit by Well, Mr. Obama tries to force my kid to take a blood oath to Karl Marx, which is why I am keeping my kids home from school on Tuesday. I'm going to be a true American and take them and get them happy meals and fill them with trans fats and have them watch 8 hours of television. And if I want to raise an illiterate with juvenile diabetes, no health insurance, and a subprime mortgage, well, that is my God-given right. You have awakened a sleeping giant, Mr. Obama. A sleeping giant is too angry to scrap.
She's too angry to scrapbook? How could it be? Now, that was a parody, folks, but really, it just kind of shows. I'm speaking to the ridiculous nature of these rabid right-wingers who are protesting and taking their guns, and I'm going to tell you. Let's go to Mike, who's on the road. I have a feeling he is, meaning driving, so we want to get him on and get him... Here we go. Mike, welcome to Night Call.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm just wanting to comment on, this whole healthcare thing. I think it's an awesome thing that, you know, we have a chance at this to have healthcare insurance for the people who maybe work at McDonald's or low-paying jobs who can't afford insurance necessarily. Me, on the other hand, I'm kind of lucky. I got pretty good insurance. I'm a gas tanker driver and union and have really good insurance.
You are very lucky, yeah.
Yeah, and especially in this economy. I mean, luckily my job hasn't budged, but for instance, last year, me and my wife, we lost our 2-year-old daughter to neuroblastoma.
Oh, no.
Which is cancer.
I'm so sorry.
And we went to St. Joe's in Pontiac for 3 days. It took them 3 days to figure out. They found the mass finally, and then we went down to Children's, and a 10-day stay with everything that happened, all the surgeries and the chemo, was just over $260,000. And surprisingly, we only owed was about $9,000 of it. So, I mean, just to imagine.
If you hadn't had that.
Right.
I mean, everyone is one health scare or one, you know, serious disease away from bankruptcy.
Right. And not only that, you know, when they redid this Medicare for the senior citizens, what was it, a year or two back, when Bush was in office there and that Plan A, Plan B, it was so confusing. And they were paying more out of pocket. And, you know, these guys are surviving off their retirement and their Social Security. You know, they're not making a bunch of money.
That's right.
And I think that it's an awesome thing. I don't know the details behind it and what everyone's so worried about, which I've been trying to read up on. But
yeah, they just don't want to pay. This is what a lot of the right wing is saying. They don't want to pay for it because they don't want to pay for those lazy people who won't get a job that provides them health benefits. But the reality of the situation, I think you and I both know this, Mike, is that even if you have a full-time job, some of them don't give you full benefits. And the copays are going up, up, up. Someone I work with said that their copay the other day was $30. I remember when it was $5. I mean, it's costing us, even people with health insurance, it's costing them a lot of money. You know, I hate to say that $9,000 is still a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, you know, it compared to what it could have been.
And then, I hear you.
You know, my insurance costs me $43 a month, and that's for Teamsters, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, health, dental, medical, vision, life insurance. You know, that's all it costs me, and not everyone's that fortunate. You know, there are people who work full-time at $8 an hour. It doesn't mean they're lazy. They didn't go to school or gain a trade or a skill. They're doing what they can do.
Well, not everyone can have a PhD, right?
Correct.
I mean, you know, this is the way the system is kind of set up, really. That's how this country is. It's kind of a caste system, as they say. You're born into something, and oftentimes you stay there, and that's just the way it is.
Well, see, you know, my grandfather always told me, either you go to school or you learn a trade of some sort. That way, you're valuable in some way. And I went to college for a year. I went to OCC, and I decided, you know what, school's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I became a truck driver, and I do all right for myself. You know, it's a pretty good paying job. I mean,
let me tell you something, Mike. I have a college degree, and I don't have health insurance. So there you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Says it all, doesn't it? Thanks for calling the show tonight, and I'm so sorry about your daughter.
Thank you.
All right. You take care, okay?
All right.
All right. More calls we do have. Hey, Roger, do you want to get line two real quick? Let's go to Rick in Lincoln Park. He wants to talk about health care. Go figure. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, how you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
This is the first time I called you.
Well, welcome.
The problem that I have is I got medical insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have kids. And
hey, can you turn your radio? Can you turn your radio down?
Okay, my medical insurance costs me $91 a week.
$91 a week, okay.
You know, and it's not paying for anything.
See?
There's a percentage I got to run and pay out of my pocket.
Right, and this should anger you.
Yeah, and when people turn around and talk about this health insurance through the government, I mean, Medicaid is better than what I have.
Exactly.
I mean, a lot of people don't understand. I mean, they haven't had it before. They don't know. I mean, the way that the medical coverage is, I mean, the doctors is just making money off people. I mean, I go to the doctor, and it seems like I keep getting bills after bills after bills in the mail, but I got to pay 30% out of my pocket.
Right, and that's too much. And it's the insurance companies as well, you know. They're the ones really.
And the premiums, too, is the big thing, because you turn around, like I said, that's almost $400 a week, and I got four people on one income.
Right.
You know, I'm the working poor. That's basically it.
Yeah, absolutely, and there are a lot of people. It was kind of like OTEP was saying earlier in her song. What was that? I'll have to find that. Oh, work, buy, consume, die.
Yeah.
Pretty much says it all.
That's basically it. It's right to the point. But like I said, this is the first time I called you, and basically that's what I basically wanted to say. I mean, how much money I'm turning around coming out of my pocket, and you got all these people, especially the Republicans, turning around complaining, well, we don't want this, we don't want that. How about turning around and letting the other people speak up?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are speaking up, and fortunately there was another rally yesterday. It wasn't just the one in Washington, and tens of thousands of people showed up to hear Obama, and I think we just need to give it a chance. I don't think it's perfect the way it is. I would prefer a single-payer healthcare system where everybody has health insurance, but we can only baby steps, right?
Well, a lot of people don't realize when Obama turned around and stepped in the picture, I mean, he turned around and took a big burden, a big...
huge burden, and he took on the burden of Bush's war in Iraq,
which
we should be more angry about because our tax dollars are going for all of that. Why don't we take those tax dollars and take care of our people? What a crazy idea.
Yeah, well, you turn around and spend all this money from the U.S. to run over there, but what happened to all that money that they supposed to have got in the beginning?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, that's a good question. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Nice.
Appreciate it. Call again, okay?
Okay, bye.
All right, great. I like it I don't know what it is about when I'm on the air that new people call, but I love it. So 313-298-WRIF. We go to Rich in Shelby Township, who also wants to talk about healthcare. Hi, Rich.
Hi, how you doing?
Excellent.
Yeah, I just figured I'd chime in my 2 cents.
Sure. That's what we're here for, man.
Right. I just turned 18, and I just went off of my parents' health insurance coverage, and I broke my ankle last week, and I get the bill in the mail from the doctor, and it's like $700.
Wow.
And I just recently started working at a McDonald's by my house.
So how long is this going to take you to pay off, right? What can they expect out of you? Are they crazy?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, you know, like Obama said, I watched the address to Congress last week, and, you know, I think that a lot of the things he's saying, you know, they make a lot of sense. It'd be a really good idea. You know, he's had a lot of good ideas since he's been in office.
Yeah.
And I think it would help out a lot. But like, I agree with you on the whole subject of if everybody had universal health care for free from the government, that would be, you know, excellent. But...
yeah, let's take care of our people, and let's talk about preventative health care, not health care that we get in the end that is, you know, kind of end-of-life stuff. And let's talk about, you know, taking care of people and making them healthy now.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of worrying about, you know, everything else, so, you know, instead of worrying about profit for the rich, let's worry about taking care of everybody else, because a good 90% of the nation is, you know, they're not rich, you know.
That's right. I mean, there's only 2%, you know, the ultra wealthy that are trying to run the whole thing and
exactly.
Who succeed. enjoy
yeah,
yourself.
Pretty much.
I'm completely fed up myself. Rich, you seem to have a pretty good head on your shoulders at 18 years old. I think you've got a good start.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're here every Sunday night, so thanks for calling. And I hope you're okay with the ankle. I hope it heals. And gosh, you know, I hate to say this because it's like, good luck. What are you supposed to say, right?
Right, exactly.
But good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Let us know how it goes, will you?
Yep.
Okay. Rich in Shelby Township calling in. Night call 313-298-WRIF. There are a couple of open lines, but right now we'll go to Brandon in Canton. Hi, Brandon. Welcome.
How are you doing, Joanne?
Great. Good to have you here.
I'm all for, you know, I believe every American should be taken care of healthcare-wise.
Yeah.
My whole thing is the dependence on the government. You know, I was talking to a guy the other day, and, you know, he's got financial aid. He pays like $80 a month. He's got a better house than I do. His kids got insurance. You know, he's got all these different things, you know, through assistance. And I asked him, I was like, well, there's an opening at my employer. You know, I could get you in making about $10 an hour. He was like, well, then I'll lose everything. Mm. You know, so they're making it better on all, you know what I mean, all the financial assistance.
Well, I can't really agree with you. I have to say, I know there are a small percentage of people who, hey, that's what they want to live on assistance. You know, that's on them. I think it sounds kind of, I don't know, boring. And I think work is good for the soul, personally. But I would think we need to really talk about the people who really need the health care, the people who become sick. And like I said earlier, who are one illness away from being bankrupt. And try to focus more on, that's always going to happen. That's always going to be there. And, you know, unfortunately, you hooked up and had that situation and had to hear all about that. But really, it's so small. And when you look at the welfare system in general, Bill Clinton kicked everyone pretty much off of it. And it's a really much smaller percentage than it has been in years and years and years. So I would like try to maybe, I don't know, I mean, I look at the bigger picture on things. And, you know, let's talk about the people who really do need health care.
Right.
And, you know, and the people who are working like me who don't have it, you know. So not all of us are, you know, looking for assistance. I would just like to have some health care. It's scary.
All right. Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
All right. As far as the whole bill, what I haven't heard is, why is the government just trying to reform the whole system? Why don't they just, the problem with the health care is the affordability, you know. And
it's getting worse and worse and worse.
Right, but that depends on the insurance corporation.
I think it's also availability. It's affordability and availability. And what they're trying to do, Brandon, is make it so the United States is like every other industrialized, wealthy nation in the world. We should be ashamed of ourselves that we don't have that.
But why don't they go after the corporations to try to legislate what they can and can't do, like, towards screwing their customers?
Right.
I think that stems back to...
I think they should do that in addition.
The campaign contributions. All these pharmaceutical companies and all these big insurance, you know, they pay into the campaign stuff. You know, maybe that's why they haven't tackled the whole, maybe we should make it, you know, a little bit easier on that.
Yeah. Well, I don't see that ever happening. But I have to say, wouldn't you rather live in a country where 97%, as in Britain, 97% of the people never get a doctor's bill in their life? Doesn't that sound great?
Yeah, but you got all these strings that come with it, you know.
Well, it's going to happen, and it's going to shake out. And, you know, there's like five models in the world of universal health care. And there's many ways that we can do this. Every country that has it is different. You know, Canada versus Britain versus Germany versus France versus Italy, Japan. There are ways that we can make this happen. And hopefully, in the end, people will realize this really is a good thing. And we should be really happy they're talking about it. Brandon, thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Let's see who has been waiting longest. Ryan in Windsor, speaking of Canadian healthcare. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent.
How are you doing tonight?
Real good. Having a good time on the show. How are you?
Good, good, good.
So let's talk about what your topic here.
Well, I just don't get a... Like, we're just right across the border here.
Yeah.
Like you were just talking about, like, our health care is all free, basically.
Yep, absolutely.
All tax dollars, and you really don't notice it.
And
you go to the doctor, you go to the hospital, it's all free.
And, you know, I was listening to about a 45-minute interview that was done on an NPR station. I don't know how long ago, but it was all about health care. They were talking about Canada, and, you know, they were talking about the long waits and things like that. And it is true that there can be some waits, but they've designed that for a reason.
For sure. And we've been to Michigan, and I know friends of mine that go to Michigan for some health care needs and over cancer and stuff like that. You have good treatment. But
yeah, well, we have the best health care in the world. We just don't have the best health care system, Ryan.
That's right.
I mean, you know, you can have anything. This guy who wrote this book that I was listening to this interview earlier, and I can't remember his name right off the top of my head, but he had shoulder problems, and he went around and basically went to all of these countries that have universal health care and saw how they would treat it. Amazing the differences. Here, they wanted to give him, like, a whole new shoulder, you know what I mean? And because that's our technology. But in the end, he went to India, and there was some Ayurvedic therapy that helped him, and it was amazing just how different it is everywhere and how they approach it.
Definitely. Like I said, just for a few tax dollars that you don't notice, basically, and it can pay for everything.
I'm all for it.
You don't even notice it.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm, you know, there are so many things that I'm not happy that my tax dollars are going to. This is one thing that I would be completely at peace with.
Yeah.
So for
10 minutes away, it you know, just a world of difference.
I know. You're very lucky, Ryan.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it, but hopefully everything can change over there as well.
I hope so, too. I think it's going to be a tough haul. I think it's going to be a long haul, but I really truly believe, as to the Democrats in Congress, believe that it's going to happen. So fingers crossed.
I hope so, too.
Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, you have a good night.
You bet. Thanks for calling Night Call 313-298-WRIF. And so many opinions on all of this, all over the place. I think people are just confused. Amber, hi. St. Clair Shores, welcome to the show.
Actually, my name is Walter Shahaki Jr.
Hi, Walter. It says Amber here, so thanks for straightening me out there.
Oh, thanks. So I wanted to talk about, I got a letter in the mail that said President Obama is giving free health care benefits to unemployed people, which I got unemployed recently.
Well, that's what he's trying to get health care for Americans in general. So
yep.
Those who are unemployed, those who are employed but not covered by insurance, the elderly, the poor, that whole thing, yeah.
And I'm just thinking about taking some colleges on cooking.
Oh, to going to chef school?
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, that's one of my dreams, too. Nice.
Yeah, but I'm not really that good at cooking. You know what I mean?
Well, then you go to school and you'll get good.
Yeah.
So what are you thinking? What's your thought?
I'm thinking I'm a virgin a little bit.
As far as cooking goes?
Yeah, I'm a really bad cook. I undercook chicken for my family all the time.
You're joking. You're messing with me.
I undercooked chicken 50 times. I've made it. I don't know how to cook chicken.
Well, it's bad to overcook it, too.
Yeah, but it tastes better than when I cook.
If you undercook it, you could end up in the hospital, and if you don't have health insurance, then you're going to end up with a really hefty bill. Thanks for calling, Walter. Appreciate your call. I'm not sure about that one, but I'm telling you, when I do this show, that kind of stuff happens all the time, and I'm A-okay with it. Last time I filled in for Peter, I was giving dating advice, for crying out loud. Antonio wants to talk about alternative medicine. He's in Roseville. Hi, Antonio.
Hi. I wanted to say that I think there's alternatives to drugs and surgery, and I think that should be in the health plan.
Yeah.
But the government wants to put a monopoly with the pharmaceutical companies, and they lie and they say that only a drug can cure or prevent a disease, but we know that's not true because vitamin C can cure scurvy.
Yeah.
And chiropractors have credibility.
I want to tell you, chiropractic saved me at one point. I'm a believer.
So I don't see why they're not putting that in the health plan. I think it should be in there.
Yeah. And you know what? Alternative medicine has gained some ground. I mean, there are some insurance companies who are covering acupuncture and certain things like that. So, fortunately, there has been headway, but I agree with you. Alternative medicine is incredibly important.
Naturopathy, homeopathy.
Yeah, all of that. And so you've experienced this. And
alternatives to drugs and surgery.
Right. And that's the thing is a lot of doctors will.
Like if you want to choose, if you get cancer and you don't want chemotherapy and you want to take the natural option, I think you should be able to choose that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Great point, Antonio. I appreciate you calling.
Okay,
all right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for throwing that in the pot as we stir it up tonight here on Night Call. 313-298-WRIF. Get your opinion in. We have about 40 more minutes to go. And let's go on to Portland, Oregon. Right on. Love it. Brad, thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. How are you tonight?
Excellent. And glad to hear from you in Portland. What a great city.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's. I'm a native Detroiter, but yeah,
you are.
It's nice out here. There's a lot of us Michigan folk out here this way.
There's a lot of good people in Portland.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, when I was calling to, I noticed you said earlier that it is a difficult issue to kind of talk to people about because healthcare, there's so many different aspects to it.
Sure.
But one of the things that I thought was you might. To simplify things for folks is, okay, we go out and we insure our homes against fire and burglary.
Right.
In our cars against accidents and theft and damage. How would we feel if, say, when your house is on fire, you get a call from your State Farm or home insurance company, whoever you're with, and they said, we're canceling your insurance coverage?
Mm-hmm.
Now, to me, if you were sick, to me, that's like your body being on fire.
True.
Well, why do we accept from our health insurance companies that it's all fine and dandy for them to take people who are in, you know, you're sick, you're getting medical care. To me, that's equivalent to your body being on fire. They can be immediately, no legal recourse, you're dropped off insurance.
Right.
In any other aspect of insurance, the insurance world, there would be people in the streets or a lot of insurance companies hiring extra security coverage.
Yeah, and they do that all the time.
Right, and it's just, you know, for instance, now I think one thing Obama mistake he made was when they started bargaining, they took single payer, which I think is the best alternative.
I agree.
Off the table immediately. And then they started bargaining from public option.
Yeah.
Wrong way to do it. They should have gone in, said, we want single payer. Then right now we would be talking instead about, geez, what are we going to get? We would be talking about, well, okay, we might not be in public option right now, but at least we'll be getting a single payer. At least we'll be getting a very strong public option.
Well, and everyone's going to get it. That's the whole thing. And, you know, in some of these other developed countries, wealthier countries that have universal health care, they can get private insurance so that they can get things like a private room in the hotel, or the hospital, rather, which is no hotel. And they can get things like, I mean, it sounds silly, but Botox or, you know, plastic surgery. They can upgrade their government insurance.
Right, right.
Hey, people can do it, right? I'm okay with that.
Sure, and I don't have a problem with it either. It's just, unfortunately, since the early 80s, it seems like the notion in this country that we should have any type of a safety net whatsoever under the least fortunate of our citizens has evaporated.
These people who are fighting it, just they place no value upon human life except their own.
Well, what's interesting is the people that are fighting it and these senators that are standing up and saying we've got the greatest health care coverage in the world, maybe they do.
Right.
But the people, deather squads, what would be an interesting question to ask them is, have you used your health insurance this year?
True.
Then when when people start to use it, then maybe their opinion of we've got the best health care system or health insurance system in the world might start being modified.
Because the deal is, we don't. And we have the worst as far as developed nations. We have the worst. And like I said earlier, we should be ashamed of ourselves.
Yeah, we should have we should have what would be the envy of the world. And just as another example, the people that are against the change, they're always keen on bragging about the free market system.
Right.
But if you look, the health insurance industry in particular it's not based on a free market model. It's based on a monopoly model.
You got that right.
In most of these states, in a lot of parts of the country, you've got maybe one or two companies selling health insurance, and that's that doesn't sound like any kind of free market I learned in school.
No,
that's
not at all.
It's a monopoly market. And my last point would be, if we and people that do have health insurance and have used it will know all about this. If you had a strong public option, or if you more ideally had a single payer healthcare system anywhere in the country, you would not get these silly out of network charges.
Right. Yep. I'm with you, Brad.
You know, I mean, if you're insured and you've gotten health insurance in Michigan, that's fine. You know, say you break your leg in Missouri. Okay, you've got health care that will cover it, but not nearly. Your health care, as we presently have it, works really good if you get injured, like the old saying goes, within 25 miles of home.
Right.
If you do a lot of traveling, you might want to explore maybe more like a single-payer health care system.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, Brad, thanks for calling all the way from Portland.
Well, thank you very much.
Do call again.
All righty.
All right, and thank you for listening to Night Call. Peter Werby will be back next week. I'm Julene Jordan. Let's go to St. Paul, Minnesota, where Tommy is standing by. Hi, Tommy.
Hi, Tommy. Hi, Julene.
Are you Tommy?
How are you? Tom is good.
Oh, Tom. Okay, well, it says Tommy. I just go by what they say, what Roger writes on the screen. And, Roger, you're doing a great job.
Okay.
Okay.
No biggie. But your previous caller about getting things simple, you were going off on a lot of tangents even with him. The healthcare is costly and complicated. Private insurers involved in the mix makes it more costly and more complicated. It does nothing for us except for create this profit-driven bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the single payer is not the answer to everything. It's not going to put us number one, but it's going to get people educated to what we really need to do. You know, people shouldn't be dissuaded from going to the doctor. People should get regular checkups. People, somebody says, hey, you should go to the doctor. They shouldn't say, oh, geez, should I go grocery shopping this week or go to the doctor?
Right.
Okay, that's what's going to save us a lot of money. And people, when they're, like you were talking about not having health insurance.
Yep.
I have health insurance and I have your other truck driver, or somebody, he was a right winger who's talking about, people can swing it.
Right, I know. I'm like, hey, who has that laying around these days?
I have a $5,000 deductible, and I pay out of pocket for all our medical stuff. It's basically having the insurance is sort of like added house insurance. So if I have some medical catastrophe, the doctors in the hospitals can't take my house. But it costs me $6,000 a year, and then I have a $5,000 deductible for myself, and I have a $5,000 deductible for my son, and a $5,000 deductible. So I could have, before this insurance company, which I've paid, between $4,000 and $6,000 every year for the last 5 years, and they've not paid out one dime.
Mm-hmm.
I could be up $20,000 in a year before they pay a dime.
Right.
And, this is where all their profits are coming from. And
a lot of them,
But everybody feels like you and me, more than 70% of the country. So when people are going to these rallies with Obama, they should be clapping and waving some single identifiable symbol that says, I support single payer. I was thinking that we should clap with one shoe to represent single payer and one hand. Everybody take a shoe off, and every time he says something,
but don't throw it at anyone.
I know, but it's going to let him know, hey, you better do the right thing or the other shoe is going to drop. He was on 60 Minutes tonight.
Yeah, I knew that he was going to be on there. I was getting ready for the show, so I didn't watch it. How'd it go?
And he said, you know, I'm going to work with this until I get it right. I'm going to be president for a while,
yep.
And I'm going to own this health care bill. That's, you know, when it passes, this is going to be my health care bill, so I want to get it right.
Yeah.
And the only thing that the only way it's going to get right is just like Medicare. You know, they argued against Medicare up one side and the other. They weren't nearly as organized about their opposition to it, but they, you know, had the same lame arguments, and it was the same.
So socialism,
corporations making all the money that was fighting it.
Yeah.
You know, without so we need people waving a yellow ribbon or a red cross
and
or
a shoe.
Something. Or the shoe. I think the shoe would be cool.
I like the shoe, Tom.
But we got to get that message to Obama that none of this public option is not going to work. If you want something, if you want something to own, you better own Medicare for all. You just drop the anybody can apply for Medicare, and we'll leave the private insurance industry in droves.
You know, and I desire the day when we here in the United States can like their insurance companies like they do in other countries.
Or not even think about the insurance companies.
Right.
We need to like our doctors. We need to like our medicines. We need to like our exercise programs. We don't. I mean, insurance companies are totally absurd thing to fill your head with.
Yeah.
You know.
I
think reading those insurance policies causes brain damage.
I think it does.
And then they want you to compare plans. So I'm going to read 120 pages of this bullshit. This bull.
Okay.
And then 120 pages of this bull, none of which is written so you can understand what they're saying, and I'm supposed to compare them? I don't want to spend my afternoon doing that.
I think it also gives one high blood pressure.
Yeah.
Oh, that too.
They're designed to make you nuts.
Yeah, they are. And they are making a lot of people nuts. But, you know, I'll tell you what, if you have a policy, be grateful, but hopefully things will improve for everybody. Tom, hey, thanks for calling from St. Paul.
Thanks for filling in for Peter. You're doing a great job.
Thank
but
you.
Just you give him a call later and say, don't worry, your job is not in jeopardy, Peter.
He's not worried about it, believe me. I mean, he loves me dearly, but I don't think he's worried about it. Thanks, Tom.
Yep, bye.
All right, bye-bye. And let's get one more call before we go to a quick break. Everyone who's on hold, Brad in Brighton. Also, we have Chris in St. Clair Shores, Jimmy in Grand Bend, Canada, and Chad in Ann Arbor. Hang on the line, but we're going to get Tommy in Warren. He's been on the line holding for quite a while. Hi, Tommy. Welcome to Night Call.
Hi. Hey, I've been holding for a little bit. I just got a few things. I work at Public Storage, and I see a lot of people that come in that lose their house. They have to put everything in storage.
But my
thing is I'm seeing these people that have families. And what's going to happen when their insurance ends up running out?
Right.
You know, how's the kids going to, you know, granted, you know, government are supposed to take care of the kids.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you one thing, George Carlin had a great saying.
What was it? I love George Carlin.
I got it off the soul.
Yeah.
I don't know it word for word, but I know it says, if you're pre-born, you're fine. If you're preschooled, you're effed. And you know what? It's honestly, the way our economy is today, that is completely true.
Yeah, well, you know, he was right on a lot of things, wasn't he?
He should have been president. I'm telling you, he should have ran for president.
I think a lot of people, I would have voted for him.
I would have voted for him. I'd say 95% of the stuff that he said was true.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, so that gives us, it gives me kind of, I want to go to YouTube and watch more of his stuff because it's all over there.
Exactly. But back on the topic, my friend Tiffany, she's probably about $200,000 in debt right now with medical.
Tiffany is?
Yes.
That, wow.
Yeah.
That's scary.
But she's got a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? It's where you can't cure.
It's
incurable.
Incurable, something like that. But the thing is the only time you'll do something is if it gets worse.
That's right. It's at the end. It's when it's, you know, just kind of making them comfortable and giving them morphine or whatever it is. We need to have these regular checkups and these tests that we, you know, colonoscopies and all of these tests and mammograms, you name it. These are things that everyone should have the right to. Everyone should have the right to that kind of health care in this country.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is what's going to happen when it reaches the end or reaches to where they can't fix it?
Yeah.
You know, there's some things that they can cure with antibiotic. But the thing is that she is not going to pay $500 for
because she can't. Because she can't, right?
Because she's working at a diner.
Mm-hmm. With no health insurance.
Right, with no health insurance. She gets paid minimum wage and whatever tips. Mm. Not even minimum wage.
Mm. It just angers me.
Right, and the people, I don't want to say everybody, but people need to open their eyes and see what the heck's going on.
Yeah, big time. All right, thanks, Tommy.
No problem.
Appreciate you calling. Night call, 313-298-WRIF. There's a couple of open lines. Everyone who's on hold, stay right there. We'll be right back.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more of your calls right after this.
Is your debt getting bigger? Are you falling behind on your bills and receiving collection calls? Well, it's not your fault. Millions of Americans are buried in credit card debt because of a job loss, divorce, medical bills, or just bad luck. But now there's a way you can get debt-free faster than you ever imagined. Call Credit Guard of America today for free information, and you'll learn how you can cut your monthly payments by up to half, lower or even eliminate your interest rates, and stop the collection calls once and for all. For free information, call 1-800-709-6136.
We owed $25,000 to the credit card companies. This year, we're going to be debt-free.
Credit Guard of America won't just help you get debt-free. We'll even show you how to improve your credit status.
They helped me pay off 10 credit cards and rebuild my credit rating.
Call us today to learn how you can cut your monthly payments by up to half and get debt-free. For free information, call 1-800-709-6136. That's 1-800-709-6136.
Do you want a wireless laptop but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging lime scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, which cost you up to 25% more. That's an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy. With HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system, guaranteed. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances and save money with HydraCare. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. Lower your energy costs. Visit bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Peter Werby back next Sunday, and I'm Julian Jordan, his co-host, doing the show solo tonight, having a great time doing it. It's our final segment, and a couple of great interviews coming up with Peter Werby, so he'll kind of be here at 1 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time. I want to let you know about a peace party that is going on this coming weekend, Saturday, or actually September 26th is what it is. It's a couple of weeks away. The Majestic Theater on Woodward Avenue in Detroit. Guess who the MC is? Peter Werby, host of WRIF's Night Call program. And tickets are available from Peace Action of Michigan. If you go to peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E, he's got it all right there. And there will be also a short video presentation of Peace Action at 50, Our Long and Winding Road. And the Backbeats, my favorite Beatles tribute band, is going to be doing Abbey Road Live. These guys are really good. I just saw them perform last week, as a matter of fact. So we'll see you all there for that. Let's go back to our phones. And, oh, Jimmy in Grand Bend, Canada, you've been waiting a long time. And, Jimmy, welcome to Night Call.
Hello, how are you?
Great. Thanks for being patient.
Okay, Jolene, I don't know if I can teach you anything because you sound very knowledgeable, but I wanted to ask you a question. I'm in Canada. I'm 41 years old. Mm-hmm. And I've never received a medical bill in my life.
Isn't that beautiful?
I can't even imagine what it would be like to open your wallet at the doctor's office.
Really? It's horrible.
But I have had 14 surgeries on my right leg.
Wow.
And luckily, I had a very talented surgeon, and he did save my leg.
Good.
I'm wondering, what would 14 surgeries cost me in Michigan?
Oh, my gosh. I would be up to millions.
Millions? Like, they would just cut it off, because I don't have millions.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. So you're saying you're happy with the way things are there in Canada, huh?
Well, I'm not really knowledgeable about your situation, but it's not even an issue. Like, I don't even think about it.
Right, and that's the way it should be. We're the only country, the only industrialized nation that does not have this. And I think we should be ashamed of ourselves. I would imagine you'd agree. It's okay. You can agree.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
It's okay. You Canadians are too nice.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
Well, thank you. I don't even know what to say. I can't imagine that system.
It's horrific on so many levels. Yeah, we have wonderful health care. I mean, talk about technology and being ahead of the fold in so many arenas when it comes to health care. But we're way behind the rest of the industrial world.
Some of the argument with Canada is that there's long waits, and I have waited 7 hours. I mean, I remember waiting 7 hours to see my doctor.
Yeah.
But it's not the end of the world.
It's like, not.
I still have a right leg.
That's right. You have your leg, damn it.
Yeah.
Well, here's to you, and here's to your right leg, Jimmy.
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for your time.
Yes, love hearing from the Canadians. They are so nice, aren't they? Brad is in Brighton. He wants to talk about health care. Welcome to the Night Call program, Brad.
How you doing? I'm calling from MacRae's, and I wanted to talk about Obama's, health care plans, and where's all the details, you know?
Well, you know, you really need to. Are you online?
Yeah.
Okay. You really need to do your research and not just rely on what you're seeing, say on CNN, especially not Fox News or MSNBC. I would suggest. There's a website called buzzflash.com.
Yeah.
I would suggest going there. I would also suggest going to truthout.org. And you know what you can do is really just go to Peter's website, peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E, and he has all those resources and links for you. You can spend days on end on that website. It is quite the monster. But really, do your research and read as much as you can, but don't do it from just the mainstream media's point of view, because you're not going to get the whole story there. Okay.
Kind of biased. He treats white-class Americans like poop,
All right. Dude, oh, my gosh. I can't believe I even heard that. He does not do that. And what he's trying to do is make it so every single American can have access to health care. Wow. The things you hear must be one of those teabagger types. We know you're out there. John's in Redford. Hi, John. Thanks for calling Night Call.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Few things I'd like to bring up. Okay, I believe that I don't have health care, but I believe that the thing is that it's gonna just like with the big three crashing, you know, eventually the medical market's gonna crash too. Everybody's gonna eventually end up owing more than they can afford, and you know, it's gonna be to where then the government's gonna have to step in and sign some kind of act to where everybody's bill gets waived anyways. If this goes through, I feel that, you know, these small companies that are out here that are putting in money into the economy, you know, they're going to have more money to put into the economy than to, you know, have to
pay for the people, their employees' insurance.
Exactly, right.
I hear you.
They won't be able to put more money into the economy.
Right on.
And then also, look at how many people are backed by state medical right now. How much is a socialized medicine going to save the state governments? You know, some more than others, of course. But look at what it's going to save and put money back into us then. And on top of that, look at all the money that we're paying for uninsured motorists.
Mm-hmm.
So, by having just a simple medical plan, I mean, not even if we go out for everything, but if we just had a simple one to where it would cover everyday basic stuff instead of costing, you know, somebody that makes, you know, $20,000 a year, if they go to the doctors and they end up paying $3,000-$4,000 and they're out every month as a payment, I don't see nothing bad in it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good. I think there, you know, things will shake out and there may be some issues, but in the main, I think, you know, the fact that we're talking about this, the fact that Obama and that everyone is just so crazy about it, I'm thrilled.
Yeah, well, what I don't understand is the people that are actually making a big fuss about it. I mean, what are they trying to make a big fuss about?
Yeah, because they don't want to take care of other people, and I'm just fine. I don't care about anybody else, right?
Yeah, it's not even about the, you don't hear them say, I want to pay more money. You know, eventually it's going to affect their own, too. You know it, and I know it.
Yeah, I do know it. Thank you.
They might have it, but their kids might not have it.
That's right, or their parents, or, you know, the list goes on and on. John, thanks for calling. I need to kind of clip through these calls. Just 15 minutes to go, actually even less than that. So let's go now to Ann Arbor, Michigan. Ooh, Zingerman's. Chad, hi, how are you?
Hi, it's Ted, not Chad.
Ted, okay.
Hey, Jolene, let's have some intelligent conversation about health care. Let's do it,
Ted. You and me, right here.
All right, because I agree with you that every single human being on the planet should be able to go into the doctor for any reason and get taken care of. That should be just like a human right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's kind of common sense.
Yeah.
First of all, let's talk about England. All right, England, their healthcare system is a government-provided system that the taxpayers pay for the service, kind of like the police department,
mm-hmm.
the fire department. It's not free. It's not free for everyone like it is in Canada. It's not free.
Although 97% of the people in Britain never get a doctor's bill.
Right. But it's not free. What happens?
I see what you're saying.
When you elect an official and you give him the authority to use your tax dollars, he should use those tax dollars to benefit you. Not to benefit him, not to benefit large corporations, not to benefit other politicians.
Right.
That's the problem. You don't have insurance companies in England like you have in this country. What you do have, you were kind of correct. They can't upgrade their government insurance, but what they can do is buy a separate policy.
A private.
Cosmetic surgeries. Right.
Right.
That's really the only insurance companies that exist in England.
Right. Exactly.
The reason for that is because they recognize that when you allow a middleman to handle every single dollar that is transpired in an industry, they get very greedy. Insurance companies do not provide any service for anybody in this country, and anybody in this country that thinks they do is an idiot. They provide the service of holding on to your money in case something happens to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
Right.
It's kind of like the same entity as the IRS. They hold on to your money so they can give you back what you deserve back out of your money.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
They signed a paper anywhere that said they could keep X amount of dollars.
Right.
Never. But they do it, or I'm susceptible by law. Now, we have Hillary Clinton. She's spouting off that she would like to make it mandatory that every single person in this country insure their children and insure themselves. Mm-hmm. And if not, it's penalty by law. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. So they're forcing me to be a consumer and give my money to this man to hold on to in case one of my children gets sick.
Right,
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I hear you. And also in England, they believe that taking care of the people is the government's job. And so do I.
It's the government's job.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And we need to, as a society, as a country, we need to keep our politicians on task.
Yeah,
they're the ones that are getting rich. They're the ones mm-hmm. that are living, you know, in the mansion here and the mansions there.
That's right.
You know why? Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
You're very knowledgeable. Let me ask you one question. Do you know why there are sessions in Congress and sessions in the Senate?
Go ahead.
They were never meant to be paid positions. They were farmers, and in the summertime when there's no sessions, they went home and took care of their farms. They went home and lived among the people that they went to Washington to represent.
Right.
They went home because they could never be that far from their constituents. If they were, they lost touch with them.
Oh, how times have changed.
Oh, but you know what? We've allowed times to change.
Yeah, that's
We've
true.
We've allowed it because what they've done is they've created a society where we are so hell-bent on trying to drive the newest car that keep the biggest house, that we no longer can be parents, we no longer can be politically active. They tell us that we should not talk about our political views. It creates fights.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing we should be talking about.
Absolutely.
Because it controls every single person in this country.
Yes,
and it
does.
Controls the ones that aren't even born.
And everything is political. I believe it. Ted in Ann Arbor, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it. And we need to clip through these phone calls because only a little bit of time yet. I don't know if I'm going to get to everyone, but I'm really going to try. Janet in Royal Oak. Hi, Janet. Welcome to Night Call.
Hi, and thank you for your forum tonight.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, boy, about the healthcare thing, I am one personally caught in the trap and the nightmare of health care and health insurance, and I consider myself the poster child for everything that is wrong in this country, just as you've been speaking up on your show and with the last caller. I relocated back to this area where I grew up mm-hmm. to take care of my mother, who became gravely ill, covered to the teeth, the eyeballs, with health insurance, great.
Yeah.
I had nothing. Well, finally, so I'm self-employed now because I can't find a job like everybody else in this economy.
Yes.
I have three college degrees. And
wow.
I had a hard time.
Three college degrees, can't find a job, has no health insurance. It says everything. That's what I said to the guy earlier. I have a college degree. I don't have health insurance. I mean, I have had it in my lifetime. But a lot of it was because I was married. You know, I'm no longer married. And so here I am, swimming around in the world with no health insurance.
You played by the rules. You went to school. You weren't on the dole like everyone likes to accuse people that aren't working of being, or
right.
those who are on assistance, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Well, so here I am. So I finally scraped up some money for some private insurance and, you know, paid through the nose, 80-20 policy, just got it jacked up to well over $300 a month, more than half
Whoa.
Of my monthly rent there. And, well, meanwhile, just before that, I went and got whopping sick, really, really
oh,
sick.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I had the whole blocked arteries things, even at my age, like my mother and all that. Well, because it was so new, they completely went on a witch hunt and tried to find every old record from 10 years, even if I had a hangnail, so they could kick me off.
Pre-existing condition, right.
Yeah, this is American Community, folks, by the way, right here in
yeah.
Livonia.
What a bunch of crap, huh?
Yeah, and so they go and they try to kick me off this, you know, policy, wouldn't pay my other bills meanwhile this was pending, sent my stuff to collections that had nothing to do with the illness, finally didn't have a leg to stand on, and they go and do this. Well, meanwhile, I went and had a stress test in January, and that plus, you know, the 80-20 policy and everything, I now have a $4,000 bill.
Of course you do.
Yeah, I've got a $4,000 bill, and it's just insane. It's like that guy said, you know, eventually, you know, what are they going to do? You know, kick people out of their homes and, you know, the government's going to have to waive all these costs anyway.
Yep.
Meanwhile, I've got a mother that's on the Medicare thing that Blue Cross is going to Lansing as we speak to try to raise the rates on that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just insane. And all these, you know, tea party people that I call tea bagger people.
They are.
Actually.
They are.
All these tea baggers, instead of carpet baggers, they're the ones that are jumping up and down saying, oh, we don't want big government controlling their lives, and we don't want big government in our living room.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? I don't want these private insurance people
right.
that have been in my living room, you know, costing me thousands of dollars I'm paying every month, and if I lose this, now I am now a pre-existing condition.
Right.
It will either be double the monthly amount of a premium, and basically no one would take me except for Blue Cross Blue Shield. Again, at double the amount I'm paying now, which would come to more than even my monthly rent.
I hear you. It's a crime, Janet, and I'm so sorry you're going through that. But please hang in there and let us know how you're doing, okay?
Yeah.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Night call. Time for we'll try to get this call in here. Susie in Dearborn Heights. Hi, Susie.
Oh, hi.
Thanks for calling.
Hi, I just wanted to say one quick thing.
Sure.
You know, that they're saying, I heard somebody else mention this, that one of the parts of this plan is that everyone is going to have to get this health insurance. And I'm for health insurance for everybody, and I think mm-hmm. that a one-payer plan should be
right.
the deal.
But not everyone's going to have to get it the way they have it, right?
Well, the way they're saying it is if you don't get it, if you don't find health insurance, if they pass this plan, then you're going to be fined.
Mm, I didn't hear that one. I don't know. That's one I have not heard. Where did you hear that?
On TV.
Okay. Well, don't believe everything on there, that's for sure.
Well, what they're saying is that, well, you know, if you're poor and you can't afford it, then they'll give you tax credits. Well, tax credits won't do it.
Oh.
It's good for poor people because poor people hardly pay any tax.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'm not too sure about it. I think I'm going to look into that a little more, but I appreciate you bringing that to light, Susie.
Well, they definitely said that is the...
Who's, but it depends on who said it. Was it one of these talking heads?
Well, it was, you know, I've heard it on different stations. I don't watch Channel 2, but it was like Channel 7 and Channel 4. They all say that you will have to get health insurance. You will have to if they pass this law.
I think that's, if you have it, if you, I don't think so. I don't think so. Hey, Roger, sorry. Roger, can you get the warm line, please? Thank you. Okay, Susie, thanks. I got to blow through these calls. I would like to hang on the line way longer with you, but.
You know, well, check into that.
Okay, I will check into it. You call us again.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. We're going to do one final call. We'll do Greg in Wyandotte. Hi, Greg.
Good evening. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. I just wanted to make a statement on regarding insurance as like a bank.
Okay.
I have a buddy who just bought a motorcycle, and he paid $1,000 for his warranty.
Yeah.
And the motorcycle dealership told him that he gets all of that back if he doesn't use the warranty. And basically, I relate that to insurance. It's all this money that you pay in, and you don't get if you don't need all that care from what you put into that fund, why can't you have something back, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
I know. You're doing a good job clipping through the calls, and I just want
I'm trying.
You know, I appreciate you allowing to let that go through.
So absolutely. You. Greg, you're welcome. Have a good night. And, a lot of you I cannot get to, but we're going to go to Robert because he's been hanging on for like 35 minutes or something. Robert in Chatham, Canada. Hello.
How are you tonight?
Wonderful. Good to hear from you.
That's great. I am going to come across as callous and maybe a little bit of an extremist, but I believe in the United States, and I believe it is probably one of the greatest countries in the entire world.
Okay.
I think you guys need to have a revolution or
Thank
something.
You.
You know, your government has literally put you guys over the barrel on
yeah.
so many articles in the past decade. It's not even funny.
Yeah. 8 years of Bush was hell.
The beginning of Bush, the Florida vote.
Yes.
It was counted three times.
Stealing the election.
And the election was ultimately decided by the Supreme Court and not the voters.
It's so embarrassing, Robert.
It's a joke in the eyes of the world, you know, that's a total joke that the citizens of the United States would accept that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I was just saying, you know, okay, we have these big, this big rally that was in Washington, D.C. of, you know, most of the people on the right side of things, which, I mean, the wrong side of things, but you know what I'm saying. Who believe in this health care initiative, in changing the system, and I'll take anything, you know, at this point, we should be organizing something big like that in Washington, and, hey, maybe I'll get it started.
What does everybody think about still being in the Middle East after 20 years?
Right, well,
20 years.
Shameful. Shameful, shameful, shameful.
And the spending alone would have gotten free health care for the United States 10 times over.
Absolutely. I hear you.
The budget that you guys are spending on the war is increasing every year for the last 7 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, that's scary.
And now the Afghanistan abyss, as I read in one article, that is an absolute mess.
They're not looking after the people when they come home.
That's right.
They're not looking after the people who volunteered at 9/11 after the crisis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Michael Moore did the movie Sicko, and as far as Michael Moore goes, yeah, maybe he's an extremist too, but he pays Time Magazine to proof his movies,
right?
Facts.
I love Michael Moore.
Yes, everything he says in his movies, regardless of whether people like it or not,
it's fact.
Time Magazine is fact.
Yeah, it is fact, and people call it propaganda. They're full of it.
I know it is. They're full of shit.
It should have won. They're full of something. That's for sure.
In Hollywood and everything, and it didn't. It was just totally atrocious that it didn't.
Right on.
You got movies like, I'm sorry, that Brokeback Mountain thing was a ridiculous movie. It had no plot, no nothing.
I love Brokeback Mountain.
You know what? I'm a critic. I'm a movie critic. I love movies.
I can't believe we're talking about this.
Over 600 Blu-rays, okay? I love movies, right?
Yeah. We got to save the Brokeback Mountain for another time, dude. I got to get off the phone.
It won. That's ridiculous.
Okay. Well, you know, that's another show and another topic, and it's good to talk to you from Canada. Robert, thanks for calling Night Call.
You've got to put your foot down and really do something.
Yep, I hear you. I'm completely with you.
Love from Canada.
Right on. All right, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right, have a good night. That's it, everybody. I've got to go. Peter Werby will be back next week. We'll be together again. I've had a great time with you all, and as always, enjoyed filling in for Peter. A couple of interviews, both having to do with movies and politics, that's next.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Overwhelmed with credit card debt? President Obama recently signed the stimulus plan to re-energize our troubled economy. But where was the bailout for the general public struggling with credit card debt? Fortunately, if you owe $10,000 or more to credit card companies, there actually is a program that can help. Call Consumer Debt Advocate for a free consultation and assistance. The toll-free number is 1-800-984-6953. If you have debt of $10,000 or more, you may begin calling now. This debt assistance program is available for members of the public in serious need of debt relief. The consultation is free, courtesy of Consumer Debt Advocate. The toll-free number is 1-800-984-6953. This debt relief program has already helped thousands of people just like you save thousands of dollars and get much-needed debt relief. Listeners with debt of $10,000 or more needing credit card relief are urged to call immediately for a free consultation. This is a confidential call. The toll-free number is 1-800-984-6953. Again, 1-800-984-6953.
This is my way to learn Spanish.
This is my way to learn French.
My way to learn Russian.
Italian.
Japanese.
My way.
My way.
Chinese.
My way to learn a foreign language.
The best way to learn a foreign language is your way. Rosetta Stone invites you to try absolutely free a software program developed around the way you think and the way you learn, the same way you learned your first language. In fact, it's been recognized as the fastest, easiest way to learn a language, guaranteed.
It's totally my way to learn Spanish.
No classrooms, no boring drills, no useless memorization. It's a learning program that works around you, not the other way around. And right now you can try it absolutely, positively free with a free demo CD-ROM.
Free. That's definitely my way.
Try Rosetta Stone for free by calling 1-800-441-3955. 1-800-441-3955. For your free demo, call 1-800-441-3955.
Did you know that most credit counselors are working for the credit card companies? It's true. They're practically collection agencies themselves. Don't turn over your financial future to them, because I've got a system that can eliminate your debt once and for all. To prove it, I'll send you a powerful free tape today.
I owed over $30,000 in credit card debt, and today, only a year and a half later, I owe no money to the credit card companies.
Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My system doesn't consolidate your debt, it eliminates it, using just the money you already make. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
I'm completely debt-free now, thanks to John Commuta.
Don't hand over your future to credit counselors. Call now, and I'll rush you my free tape today. Call 1-800-600-5460 for your free tape. Call 1-800-600-5460. 1-800-600-5460.
101.1 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, it's been said so frequently and so accurately, this is a nation of immigrants, and we've enjoyed stories of immigrants, both for the pathos of them often, sometimes for their humor. And if you think about early television shows like the Molly Goldberg Show or I Remember Mama or stuff like that about Jewish immigrants and about Norwegian immigrants, and yet immigrants aren't always quite as welcome as the Statue of Liberty saying at the base of it would like you to think. I mean, I always remember being partly of Irish descent, just a little sliver there, that in the 1840s you would see a sign that said a job for sale, a job open, no Irish need apply. So coming to America has always been mixed, and often as well for the second generation. I wonder how many people who are of a second generation or remember maybe their parents saying, "Mom, we're in America, talk English." Well, a wonderful film, a charming film, a film well worth seeing that I was privileged to see at a special showing at the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn a week ago or so, is Amrika. It is a film done by Shireen Davis, and she's on the line with us. We're reaching her at her hotel in Beverly Hills. Shireen Davis, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And congratulations. This is your first feature film.
It is.
Why did you choose this one? I mean, this, as you said in the Q&A, I kind of know the answer to this. This has a bit of an autobiographical feel to it, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this story has been with me since I was 14, and because of the events that it's based on, I would say has even propelled me to become a filmmaker. In many ways, it's like I became a filmmaker in order to tell this particular story.
And are you Palestinian in the way that the person, the central feature, Muna, is in Amrika?
I am, yes. My father is Palestinian. My mother is Jordanian. So.
Did you ever say, "Mom, talk English"?
I did all the time when I was younger, definitely. I am guilty of that.
Well, it's not, you know, don't you think the second generation goes through that? When they're young, they're embarrassed by their parents and their old ways. And then, like you begin to understand the depth of the quality of it all.
Yeah, you begin to understand the depth, you begin to accept who you are. And I think really, for me at least, and I think many other first generation, you know, born in this country, you begin to really appreciate the fact that you've been given, you know, two different perspectives on the world. You know, this sort of the parents' cultural perspective, but also the perspective of the new country in which you were born.
Tell us what Amrika, A-M-R-E-E-K-A, that's Amrika, and you go to Amrika.com, and there's more about the film by Shireen Davis, who's my guest. What is Amrika?
Amrika is actually Arabic for America, and it's the way in which many sort of traditional Arabs still say America. I mean, people do also say America, but Amrika is sort of like the really, you know, traditional way of saying it. And, you know, I wanted to find a title for the movie that was sort of, that indicated the cultural melding of, you know, that is sort of at the heart of this movie. And that's exactly what this title does. It's sort of, you know, it's America, but it's a very specific America. It's America that is about, you know, the Arab American community.
Mm-hmm. Now, your film, Amrika, has been very well received. It got official selection at the Sundance Film Festival, 2 awards at the Cannes Film Festival. This is maybe an odd question, but were you surprised that it was as well received as it was? I mean, first effort and no wagon trains were ambushed, no guns. Was there a gun? No, there was some guns in it, but I guess none of them were fired.
Yeah.
Did this surprise you that it got such overwhelming critical response?
Well, I have to admit that it did. It definitely did. I'm not really certain what I was expecting anymore, because I feel like too much has happened now for me to really be able to remember what I was expecting. But the reaction has really blown my mind. I mean, I think I just expected a smaller film with a smaller reception, more of a modest reception. And this film has just, it's been so widely embraced by so many different people, different ethnic groups, all different kinds of Americans, all different religious backgrounds. And I think what's surprising me is that people are just really connecting to the universality of the film. And I think it was something that I really hoped for, but just wasn't certain how much it would actually translate, you know, into box office and audiences responding. And it's been really tremendous.
Mm-hmm. And Amrika is opening at the Maple Theater in West Bloomfield this coming Friday, September 18th. So, I've seen it. As I said, I saw it at a special showing at the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn, a facility that you should check out in any event. So it's a real Detroit area treasure. And had you been to other screenings like this where there were large audiences?
Yeah, you know, I've been on an 11-city tour, and so I've been traveling around the U.S. doing a lot of these special screenings. But I have to say, Dearborn was especially, you know, close to my heart, because it really is like the pulse of Arab America. And we had 2 really packed theaters at the Arab American National Museum, which is such an amazing place, you know, sort of houses the Arab American, you know, larger narrative. And so that was a really kind of highlight of my tour.
How did you feel? I mean, I remember there was one man during the question and answer period that said this was the best film he'd ever seen in his entire life, and I think you could appreciate where that sentiment, that assessment was coming from. It. I mean, you may have been thinking, gee, was it better than Gone with the Wind or Citizen Kane but you knew where he was coming from, because more than Citizen Kane, this spoke right to this man in the audience, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, for the first time, Arab Americans are getting to see themselves authentically depicted on the big screen, and I think that that's monumental for many people. And I knew that it was for me, and I guess I didn't think about, I guess I knew it would be for other people as well, but again, you know, as a filmmaker, you make something that you like, hoping that it'll translate and other people will like it as well. And when that happens, sometimes it can still be shocking, even though it was what you hoped for. It's like, oh my God, it's happening, it's coming true. So, That was a really special moment.
Mm-hmm. Shireen Davis is my guest in the Peter Werby Show. The film is Amrika, Amreeka. You can add a .com and go to the website for that. It's opening at the Maple Theater this coming Friday, September 18th. Tell us the broad outlines of the film. I mean, and it in many ways is what you would think. I mean, it's an immigrant family coming to America and ripped out of the culture in which they were born and new, and all of what that comes with that. Tell us the story of Muna.
Well, you know, Muna is this ever-optimistic, sort of earnest Palestinian single mom who comes to the U.S. in order to secure a better future for her son. And she winds up in the middle of the country in rural Illinois, where she has a sister, and she stays with her sister and her sister's family, and discovers that they're actually going through hardship because of the not-so-friendly political environment. Her arrival in the U.S. actually coincides with the second invasion of Iraq in 2003. So the heightened sense of wartime patriotism creates a climate climate that's not very friendly for, you know, the new Arab immigrants. And Muna, on the other hand, is just such a, she's such a trusting character and such a, just a hopeful, optimistic person that she looks past people's judgments and doesn't necessarily see them. And I think that she's very disarming because of that. And so people who even might have found her suspicious end up really liking her because she just is such a genuine person. And I think that that's what makes the film, you know, unique.
Tell us,
is Muna's point of view.
Tell us, if you will, how the autobiographical content of this intersects with your own personal life.
Well, my, you know, my father was a physician who lost a number of his patients during the first Gulf War in 1991. I grew up in a small town, rural Ohio, a town of about 10,000 people. So, you know, a lot of what happened in the movie, you know, a doctor losing his patients, receiving death threats, we actually received them on a daily basis during the first Gulf War. And in fact, I would say in real life, things were more absurd than they get in the movie. In real life, the Secret Service actually showed up at my high school because of a report that they received that my 17-year-old sister threatened to kill the president.
What was the origin of the complaint or the information?
Well, we never really found out, but we suspect that because my sister was outspoken in her government class,
mm-hmm.
and was not popular in that class because of her, you know, her viewpoints, which were much more global than other people in the classroom. We suspect that someone may have called in order to kind of get back at her or just sort of teach her a lesson type of thing.
Why didn't you include that in the film? I mean, that seems to me very dramatic, or did it seem like it would it would almost sound preposterous?
That's exactly it. It's sort of like I'm not certain that people would have believed that that could ever happen, even though it did happen. But that's kind of the irony of, you know, of filmmaking and sometimes trying to assess what's realistic, even though what is actually realistic, people might not believe is realistic in the film world.
Were you in high school in 1991 or younger than that?
I was a freshman in high school during 1991. So, you know, what happened to my family made a huge impression on me. And that was around the time that I became really obsessed with the media and the way that, you know, Middle Eastern events were being reported and the way that Arabs were being stereotyped. And that's when I really decided that I needed to do something about that, about getting our authentic stories out into the mainstream.
Yeah, and when you, that period, when you started getting death threats, that would sort of frighten me. You know, I mean, do you remember looking back on it? Were you frightened? Were you angry? Were you both?
Oh, both, for certain. I mean, you know, the Secret Service showing up at my high school was definitely the pinnacle of you know, everything that happened. And I remember my parents sitting at the kitchen table whispering about moving to Cleveland, and my sister had come down with a fever of 104 because she was so afraid that she was in trouble with the government for something she never threatened to do. And so it was quite chaotic, but I think that what struck me at that time was the absurdity of what people thought about us, just given what I knew about my family. You know, my father actually bought two baseball bats, similar to Nabil in film. That was his way of protecting his family, you know, and they thought that this man who couldn't even have a gun in his home was a terrorist. And I just kept thinking, you know, people need to see who we actually are. People need to understand these events from our point of view, because that's never, you know, we've never seen that before.
You know, one of the real problems with stereotypes, if they don't have some basis in reality, I mean, they can't even be recognized. So we're at a point where that a lot of, and certainly no way in any manner exclusively, is terrorism carried out by a Muslim or Islamic based terrorists. So they're there. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, that influences the view of everyone. Although I got to say that, you know, in the 1960s and 70s, everybody didn't think every white college student was a terrorist after the Weatherman. But there is that way of certainly the people that are viewed as the other to begin with a big capital O, that when a sliver, a minutia of people that are in some large regard similar, that there's the brush with the tar hits everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's what happened. And in the first Gulf War, there was it wasn't even a reaction to anything. I mean, 9/11, people, you know, the hysteria that that accompanied the real concern and anger and mm-hmm. what have you. But in the first Gulf War, the idea that you're looking to Arab people as enemies was really preposterous. And yet there you were.
Yeah.
The film is Amreka. You can go to amreka.com is the website. The film's Amreka. Amreka.com is the website. Shireen Davis is my guest. She is the director, and it's going to open at the Maple Theater on Friday, September 18th. I'm very curious. In fact, I don't want to give away too much, but if you would just talk a little about the volatile point of the Palestine when Muna is still in Palestine, and how she the frustrations with the Arab with the Israeli checkpoint and arbitrariness of those, and I'll leave it up to you whether you want to give any more of what I'm suggesting, right? There's mm-hmm. a kind of a surprise in there in terms of who befriends Muna. But tell us just a little about that, the wall and what you wanted to portray with that.
Well, I definitely wanted to portray just the frustration of daily life for Palestinians in the West Bank. And, that's one of the reasons why Muna chooses to leave. That combined with, the fact that she's living in the shadows of a failed marriage. She's living with a mother who's incredibly controlling. And I think that the main reason really is because her son is so enthusiastic about leaving, because there's just more opportunity for him in the U.S. So, the West Bank is really full of us seeing, the monotony of Muna's job and sort of the frustration of her current situation. And that definitely includes, driving past the 30-foot-high concrete wall that is entirely on Palestinian land, driving, having to be trapped in her car, basically, at a checkpoint every day on her commute to work, and seeing the way in which the soldiers interact with her. And so, all of that is really seen through her point of view, so that we understand how it weighs down on her, and ultimately it's also that we understand why she decides to leave and what it is that she thinks she's escaping from and going to.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about filming in the West Bank. Some of it was actually filmed there, right?
It was actually all of those scenes that take place in the West Bank were in fact shot in the West Bank. They were shot in Ramallah and Bethlehem. And I have to admit that was the smoothest part of our shoot. It was incredible. Yeah. It was my favorite part of shooting was when we shot in Palestine.
How come?
Well, I had shot a short film there back in 2005, and it was extremely difficult because I didn't know what I was doing. It was the first time I'd ever shot there. I didn't align myself with the right people. There were no crews at that time. So, I brought in a DP from the U.S., and we had to train people. By the time I went back to shoot Amreka, which, we shot in the West Bank for 6 days, it was 3 years later. The people that we had trained back in 2005 had continued working, and so there was a burgeoning film community. A number of films had shot there in the, in the past few years, and because I'd been there once before, I sort of knew what to do and what not to do this time around. So it was an enormous help to have done it once before. And we worked with a really experienced Palestinian line producer who just took care of all of the logistics. And, the logistics of shooting there is really one of the most complicated parts of the process. It's figuring out how to get the equipment from cargo in Israel, to the checkpoint, and then having to transfer all of the equipment into a Palestinian truck with Palestinian drivers and a, green license plate, and all of those sort of details that you would just take for granted anywhere else.
What was there? I mean, I don't know if I'm surprised or what, that the Israeli authorities would see a Palestinian American filmmaker is going to do a shoot that's going to present the wall in perhaps in a light or without what they would call full context. Was there any objection on the part of the Israelis to you shooting there and shooting your film, Amreka?
Well, we had the not at all, because we didn't shoot in Israel at all. We shot in Palestine, so we had the permission of the Palestinian Authority, and the Israeli authorities never had any say or involvement in the film whatsoever. Aside from the fact that, you know, we had to work with an Israeli customs agent to get our equipment in, and we had to work with the same person in order to get our film out safely because we shot on Super 16, and we did have an Israeli producer at the ready in case we needed anything at all. So. Mm-hmm. We had everything that we had, all the permissions that we needed on the Palestinian side, and we had people on the Israeli side who were helping us, and the people who were willing to help if anything went wrong. But the Israeli authorities had no idea, you know, what the movie was about. You know, I had to tell them when I showed up at the border what I was there doing. But they didn't get involved, and there was no issue of censorship mm-hmm. or worry over the content.
Trey Davis, your film, Amrika, is, am I correct, is the first film from National Geographic Entertainment, a new division of the National Geographic?
That's correct.
And
the first fiction film release for them.
I was actually a little surprised because in a sense, everything is political. Everything that's centered in Palestine and Israel, everything about the wall is ultimately political. But I was surprised but pleased that they actually were willing to have this be their first release as a fictional film. But has there been any controversy? Anybody was saying, hey, look, you didn't, you know, the wall's there, but you didn't present the full context. Has there been anything like that?
There, you know, for the most part, no. There have been a few comments about, I would say literally like, you know, two or three people who have made comments about, you know, presenting checkpoints or the wall out of context, not presenting the Israeli side. But, you know, my response to that is that this movie it's a personal film and it's told through the eyes of a Palestinian woman. And mm-hmm. it's not, you know, I don't think it's the responsibility of every Palestinian filmmaker to present a balanced portrayal, even though at the same time, this movie is quite balanced in its politics, and I think it's quite fair. And the politics very much take the back seat to the humanity of the characters that, you know, that we see in the film. So I think, you know, my response is just that the film portrays the reality of the Palestinian situation from the point of view of a Palestinian woman
sure.
who is frustrated enough to, you know, accept the green card that she ends up receiving and, you know, immigrating to the U.S.
As I said earlier, the balance is presented in a surprising manner, which I will leave you viewers who go to see Amrika at the Maple Theater opening Friday, September 18th. Now, one of the things that did surprise me, too, was the involvement of the Canadian Film Board.
Mm-hmm.
And it was filmed partially in Canada, or...?
Yeah, all of the North American scenes, for the most part, were shot in Canada. We did do a much smaller B-unit shoot in Chicago to get some of those iconic skyline shots. But Canada came in for a portion of our financing, so we were able to close our financing because we got provincial equity from Manitoba and because of the Canadian tax credits, which are quite aggressive.
Yeah, and I see we're coming close to being out of time. But let's just quickly go back to when I said earlier that I first saw this at the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn, and you were talking about portrayal of Arab people in the media, and I'm sure you had a tour of the museum, and there's a whole section where they show just these grotesque images of Arab people, not beginning after 9/11 and not beginning in 1991, but going back into almost the beginning of films and in portrayal in Western literature. This Amrika, it doesn't have the capacity, obviously, to reverse that whole Western media presentation of Arabs. But is that your hope, that at least it does a little?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's my hope that it'll at least make a dent and potentially cross over into the mainstream, so that for the first time, Arabs and Arab Americans can be a part of the, you know, the American mainstream fabric. And I think that just taking a step in that direction, proving that we're an audience to be taken seriously, and that these kinds of movies can continue to be made, and that we as a community are demanding authentic portrayals of ourselves, I think is a really important first step. And hopefully, you know, if Amrika does well, if people go out to the theater to see it, it. Again, like I said, if we can prove that we're interested in these stories, then we'll get to see more of them made, and then we'll actually truly make a dent, I think.
Well, Shereen, you said that Amerika has partly a autobiographical basis to it, but what's the next film from Shereen Davis?
It is, it's another cross-cultural dramedy, I would say. It's somewhat the reverse of Amerika, actually. It's about a 30-year-old Arab-American who goes to Jordan to plan her summer wedding, despite the fact that her whole family disapproves of the groom.
Ah, and this is in process, or?
It is. The script is currently in process. Yes, I hope to shoot this coming summer.
Oh, that's great. Well, I saw it. I loved it. I want to, I'm not an Arab American, so you don't have to, it's one of these things sometimes people think, oh, well, I'm not Arab American, just like the Molly Goldberg Show was the most popular TV and radio and TV program at a time of high anti-Semitism in a period of very frequently unwarranted high prejudice against Arabs and Arab Americans. This is a terrific film to see, as my guest said, to really humanize and express the universal experience of people that make this country so great. So, Shereen Davis, I want to thank you so much. I would urge people to go out and see Amerika. You can go to amerika.com. It's AMREEKA.com. Or you can go to my website, Peter Werbe. That's WERBE.com. And Shereen Davis, we look forward to your next film.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
There's something happening across America. People aren't just calling themselves DirecTV customers. They're calling themselves fans. That's because DirecTV has exclusive sports packages like NFL Sunday Ticket and free NASCAR Hot Pass. DirecTV has the most HD channels with over 130, soon to be over 200, and 50 times more movies available than 1080p. Perhaps that's why DirecTV is ranked number one in customer satisfaction among all TV service providers. So don't just watch TV. Become a huge fan. Switch to DirecTV today. Call 1-888-359-5566. There's no equipment to buy and no startup costs. Packages start at just $29.99 a month. Call 1-888-359-5566. That's 1-888-359-5566. Sports subscriptions sold separately. New customers only on approved credit. Credit card required except Massachusetts and Pennsylvania. Hardware lease and programming commitment required and available separately. Other conditions apply. Call for details.
How would you like to lose weight for free? Hi, I'm Steve Bostic for Right Size Smoothies.
And I'm Scott Johnson. For a few months now, we've offered an incredible deal to the public. Use Right Size Free for 2 full weeks and see how much weight you can lose before you pay for them.
But some of you haven't called, so we're offering one last chance to take advantage of this popular offer. These people called.
I lost weight within a couple days. Now I'm down 120 pounds.
A free trial sounded like a no-brainer, so I called. Within the first week, I'd lost a lot of weight.
I knew within a few days I finally found the answer. I've lost 44 pounds.
Right Size Smoothies contain an appetite manager that knocks out hunger cold. You'll see results early, so you'll know you can do it.
How much weight can you lose in 2 weeks? Try Right Size Free and find out. You could be our next testimonial.
For your free 2-week trial, call 1-800-644-1454. 1-800-644-1454. 1-800-644-1454.
Are you receiving monthly checks from a lawsuit you won? Are you having trouble paying your bills every month because the settlement money you're getting just isn't enough? Well, there is a way you can get the cash you need now in one lump sum payment. For free information to see how much cash you can get, call Peachtree Settlement Funding now at 1-800-978-5459. Find out how you can turn your future structured settlement payments into the cash you need now to get free of your credit card debt, to meet your rising mortgage payments, to pay your medical bills and other expenses. If you're receiving payments from a lawsuit, call Peachtree Settlement Funding. For your free information, call now 1-800-978-5459. You have bills piling up that need to be paid now, so why wait any longer? Get the future money you have coming to you now when you need it most. For your free information, call Peachtree Settlement Funding now at 1-800-978-5459. That's 1-800-978-5459. 1-800-978-5459.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. 2 days ago, it was an ignominious anniversary, the 8th anniversary of the attacks on the United States on September 11th, 2001. And the face of terror is one, for better or for worse, stereotype or not, is of an Islamic extremist. That's who we view as carrying out dastardly acts, not only in this country, but around the world. There are other acts of terror going on by a variety of different people that see political terror, political violence, as a way to achieve and accomplish certain ends. But it's interesting, a generation ago, that was not the view. Although there were Arab hijacking of airplanes by Arabs in the Middle East and in Europe, that it was very frequently seen as a white college student, both in the United States, but particularly in Europe, where groups of radical youth, angered by their own nation or by their nation's cooperation with the United States and the United States' war against Vietnam, took up arms, felt if there was fighting in Vietnam that it was appropriate for them to take up arms as well. During the 1970s, there were murderous bomb attacks, and the fear of an enemy that was in Germany, in this case, and what we're going to talk about, that that rocked the foundations of what was still then a fragile German democracy. And and we're going to be talking about a film that is coming to the main theater. It's called the Bader-Meinhof Complex, and Bader was Andreas Bader, and Meinhof was Ulrike Meinhof, and they launched a violent war against the German establishment and also against symbols of American, what they called imperialism, and at that time the war in Vietnam. It was a story that's very difficult to tell. The film, the Bader-Meinhof Complex, that's coming to the main theater on Friday, September 18th, coming right up. This is a very disturbing film, and joining us to talk about it is Richard Huffman. It's Richard Huffman, HUFFMAN.com, and I give you that spelling because he's the creator of the website and has spent an enormous amount of time following this particular group called popularly the Bader-Meinhof Gang, although they refer to themselves as the Red Army Fraction. And joining us, Richard Huffman, welcome to the broadcast. Actually, I don't even know where you are. Are you in Seattle?
I'm in Seattle, Washington.
Okay. Well, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks, Peter.
Now, you have actually, and anything I've left out, we can kind of fill in as we go along, and so much of it is on your website, Bader-Meinhof.com or RichardHuffman.com. But there's actually a personal connection between you and these violent radicals of 30 years ago or of a generation ago.
Yeah, that's true. My my dad, I'm an Army brat. My dad, after he was in Vietnam, he was a explosive ordnance disposal tech in Vietnam. He did the job that those people in that movie, The Hurt Locker, did, only he did it in Vietnam. And when he got out of there, he went to Berlin, and we all moved there, and he ended up being the head of the bomb disposal unit in Berlin, which wouldn't seem to be particularly dangerous duty, except for we arrived there at the real beginning of this homegrown urban terrorist movement. So he ended up defusing, he estimates, about 7 terrorist bombs, including one that could have come close to killing my mother and one that was specifically targeted at my dad. And these were bombs left by comrades of what I later learned were the Bader-Meinhof group.
So is this Richard Huffman's revenge, or is it interest? Is it obsession? What? How would you describe
it? It's certainly an obsession. It's I wasn't even aware of this history until I went to college, and it became sort of my senior thesis about 10, 12 years ago. And I just was endlessly fascinated by the subject, and I've always been, my dad's attitude towards it kind of mirrors mine. My dad really, he didn't hold any particular animus to these people. In fact, it just was his job. And so I try to maintain a real balance from a real recognition to the absolute devastation that these people wrought, but to also an understanding of what they were fighting on, even if their tactics were, I consider, completely inappropriate and wrong. But also, I don't come at it from a particularly conservative or liberal bent. I just try to be as accurate and understanding as possible. I just find them fascinating as people and a fascinating subject.
Well, I haven't looked too deeply into your website, but I intend to. It's Bader-Meinhof, and it's B-A-A-D-E-R. If you can think like Bader, like that, hyphen Meinhof, M-E-I-N-H-O-F.com, or also Richard Huffman, H-U-F-F-M-A-N.com will get you there as well. I'll have a link on my site. Give us an idea of the destruction and death that the Bader, what do you think is appropriate to call them? What do you like? Do you like?
Well, in America, they're honestly only referred to as the Bader-Meinhof gang. Now, if you call them that in Germany, you're basically making a political statement, because they, in Germany, they would, if you were liberal, you would call them the Bader-Meinhof groups, because gang implied that they were, you know, they were nefarious and they didn't have a political goal. Ironically, the group didn't call themselves either of those names. They called themselves the Red Army Faction. And Bader-Meinhof, which was the name of two of the leaders of the group, implied that it was some form of cult of personality, which they eschewed, although ironically it kind of was a cult of personality. So in many respects, it was a pretty accurate moniker.
Yeah, one of the things I should say, just so people don't think either myself or Richard Huffman misspoke themselves, and I don't want to get into the difference between fraction and faction, but
sure,
there was often they were often called the fraction as well.
Typically faction would often be an English translation of fraction, but both is entirely accurate. So one way to look at what they did is to compare the effect on their attacks in Germany in the early 70s and the mid 70s. It's often been compared in Germany as being Germany's 9/11. It had a very comparable impact on their society. Here's a way to picture it. Picture in about a 3-month time period, picture somebody killing the Attorney General, somebody killing the head of Microsoft, somebody killing the head, you know, John Roberts, the head of the Supreme Court. That's the equivalent people that the Bader-Meinhof killed in 1976-77. They declared war on America. They killed several American soldiers at army bases. And the German people had a similar reaction to the way America did. They kind of went overboard. They had their own war on terror that ostensibly felt like it was addressing the terror, but in reality ended up having a lot of long-term impacts on society that seemed to have nothing to do with terrorism, but had everything to do with curtailing civil liberties and other actions that I'm sure at the beginning they did not anticipate or intend.
Now, the Bader-Meinhof, it's called group, saw themselves as soldiers in a worldwide revolution. And it's kind of, you know, you've probably heard the phrase, you know, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. I have a little simple equation of my own on how to judge acts, but that's maybe for another time. And for instance, the British called like Light Horse Harry Lee, who fought the British in South Carolina. They referred to him as a terrorist. So it's essentially where you're sitting in it all, right? Che Guevara was a hero. Ho Chi Minh was a hero. Well, if you're on the other side of things, they're murderous. Terrorist or totalitarian dictator. So, I mean, is there a way to find any ethical common ground or base from which to judge all this?
Well, it is true. Of course, with these guys, they actually, and a lot of groups like this, once they began their murderous efforts, meaning they started killing people as opposed to doing damaging buildings and objects, their level of support shrank to almost nothing. But it's important to note, prior to that, they engendered a level of support that is almost, it's almost impossible to believe at the time. This is a group that was dedicated to the violent overthrow of Western society, and they were running around Germany, and at one point in the mid-1971, a group did a poll, a group comparable to the Gallup poll in America, and they asked Germans, particularly young Germans, would you be willing to harbor these people in your home for a night? If somebody from the Bader-Meinhof group came to your home and said, I want to spend the night, and they found that 10% of young Germans said, yeah, I'd like to do that. And about 20% of young Germans expressed what they called a certain sympathy for the group. Now, that's extraordinary. That equates to millions and millions of Germans. And that level of support, I don't think, has ever been seen since for any type of group in a Western society. Now, once they started killing people, suddenly people weren't on the fence anymore. Then few people were supporting their actions because they seemed brutal and they seemed awful. Now, perhaps in the lens of history 100 years on, people might view it differently, but there wasn't a lot of support. And on my personal level, I tend to try to think of it real agnostically and try to understand where people are coming from. But on a personal level, I came very, very close to having my dad murdered by left-wing terrorists, or my mom murdered by left-wing sure. terrorists. And that's not a joke. They were absolutely very close to both being killed by them, and I try to imagine how my life would have been different. I can guarantee you 100%, for instance, were my mom killed, they would have said in the press and in their
communiques,
they would have said, well, this was a casualty. This was a person who was not a victim, but this was a person who was partly responsible because they were Americans. They're part of the thing, and just the thought that they would justify the death of my mom caused me to question that a little bit.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I didn't mean to be too elusive earlier. My sort of personal ethical thing is that you never harm an unarmed person. I mean, you can, at some point, and you can see this I know there was a recent attempted bombing that fortunately didn't injure anybody by an Animal Liberation Front activist who put a bomb in a place that was doing animal testing. The idea was that anybody that works there, mailboy, the janitor, everyone is complicit. So in that regard, I mean, here's the United States that's waging this cruel war against this country that never did anything to the United States and which the origins, in my opinion, are based on misinformation and actually outright lies, much in the way of the Iraq War was. And so the idea was that any American was complicit. So Richard Huffman's father was. And then if Richard Huffman's mother gets caught in that, well, that's just one of the sad consequences of war, no different than to what the Americans are launching. But that's a slippery slope. Then you can just start machine gunning American school kids, right?
Yeah, you know, my dad, when he was in Vietnam, he was the head of essentially the depot, the arms depot, where about 95% of all weaponry went through Vietnam. So 95% of all weaponry that went through from mid-1969 through mid-1970 went through my dad's hands. So had my dad been killed, they would have made a very compelling argument for they were killing somebody whose a lot of blood was on his hands. And I could understand that sort of philosophically why they were making that argument. Of course, this is my dad, and I would be opposed to that. But I probably, had I been around at that time, would have been very opposed to the Vietnam War. So it's a challenge. The real interesting comparison is to look at the Red Army faction, Bottom IF group, and compare them to the Weather Underground in the United States, because they were active at exactly the same time, and they were enraged by exactly the same things. Yet, for a variety of reasons, the Weather Underground, although they were close to being extremely violent and willing to kill people, they actually stopped and chose not to do that, and they chose to focus all of their energies on not harming people. Now, you could argue they're still terrorists, but I would argue that it's a completely different type, and they went a completely different direction. And if you're inclined to justify them, it's easier to justify what they did versus what the Red Army faction did, because as you suggest, it's a slippery slope. No matter who they killed, they managed to figure out ways to justify it. Even very innocent people, even people that had that in retrospect you could hardly make an argument that they were in any way justified in being killed.
Sure. Once the blood flows, everybody's got an excuse for killing everybody, no matter what their status. My guest is Richard Huffman. Excuse me. He is the creator of RichardHuffman.com, also BaderMeinhof.com, and that's Bader-Meinhof.com. I think if you Google it, even if you misspelled it, you'd probably come up with it. And the reason we're talking about this is the movie, The Bader-Meinhof Complex, is opening at the main theater on Friday, September 18th, and it's about these left-wing terrorists in the 1970s, who actually the extension of them went into the 1990s, what they called it, like third generation Bader-Meinhof, and their final toll, wasn't it, like they'd killed like 36 people?
Correct. All told, over the life of the group, it was about 30, 35 people, and they, and the, in one respect, it's kind of weird to, like, do comparisons, and it's hard to even remotely in any way make a comparison to the toll that we took on 9/11, but it over such a long period of time, it devastated society in Germany. It also scared the living pants off of anybody who was an industrialist in Germany. There are times in Germany in the 70s where if you ran a large corporation, you went everywhere with armed guards. You fled the country because you were scared that you were going to be killed by the Bader-Meinhof.
And even the armed guards sometimes weren't enough because
it certainly wasn't.
The armed guards were killed. Let me ask you this, Richard Huffman. Have you, I probably should have asked you this before, have you seen the film, The Bader-Meinhof Complex, that's opening at the Main?
I've seen it a couple times. It's a fantastic movie, and I think what makes it uniquely great from my perspective is it's extremely accurate. There are scenes in there, for instance, at the beginning there's a riot scene that took place on June 2nd, 1967 in Berlin where students are protesting the Shah of Iran's visit, and it's kind of a turning point of the student movement in Germany, and it's like opening a vein of history, and it was filmed right at the spot where it happens. It's just brilliant.
And it's horrifying, too.
And that particular has resonance to me because the group that tried to kill my dad is a group called the June 2nd Movement, and they were named after this riot, and this riot happened just a couple miles from where my dad was targeted.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at that, and I'm thinking, wow, this is like my own personal history tied up in that. But beyond that, the movie does two things great. It really captures things accurately, so you get a sense of why people found this group so exciting, why they had such support amongst young people, why they were sexy and exciting, and also why they were horrifying, and why they scared the pants off of Germany. And that movie was really controversial when it came out in Germany. It came out almost a year ago in Germany.
Really? I was going to ask you about that, how it played in Germany.
It was very, very controversial, and the reason it was controversial was because it is very exciting. And I think many people, including Ulrike Meinhof's daughter, basically is saying it glorifies terrorism. It glorifies what these people did. And I would not dispute that in a sense. It's exciting, but I don't think it glorifies it. I think it portrays it accurately. This was a time in Germany when people were very excited about this group, and this movie makes you understand that, and it also makes you understand the devastation they wrought, and it also makes you understand at the end that it amounted to nothing. They really accomplished nothing, and I think it served all of those needs. If it were to paint this group in a holy swath of negative, awful light, it would not do justice to the amount of support that this group had. And if it were to paint it in a wholly positive light, it would not do justice to the amount of devastation they wrought. And it seemed to me it got that balance pretty well right down the middle.
You know, if you went to assassinations, I mean, you go back to Julius Caesar, but say in the modern era, the 19th century, and the attempted assassinations of the czars, the presidents of Italy and France and all that in the early part of this century, the political assassination of President McKinley, all of that. I mean, you realize that that although it's created enormous trauma, or even, and you can include the just past 9/11 anniversary, enormous damage, trauma to society, and certainly to the people involved that suffered directly, or people, you know, families and what have you, and nothing really changed. I mean, oftentimes the people are motivated by great ideals, often from the left, sometimes from the right, and yet nothing really changes. That's not the way change comes about.
That's true. And, you know, it's interesting, in the early, when this was going on, when the Bader-Meinhof group was waging their war, there was two threats going on in Germany in leftist thought. There was a leader, a guy named Red Rudy Dutschke. He's in this movie because he was famously, there was an attempted assassination on him by this crazed house painter. And he was a firebrand, but he was arguing for what he called the Long March Through the Institutions,
right,
which was a play on Mao's Long March Across China. And what he was basically saying is, you know, you need to get in, even though you're a radical, even though you're a leftist, you need to become, join the politics. You need to join labor unions. You need to change it from within. And it might take 20 years, but you are going to become that institution and change it. And the bottom IF group said, that's baloney. That's crap.
People are dying right now in Vietnam. That was
exactly.
Yeah.
And we need to stop that. And he was saying, no, we need to change it. So fast forward 25 years. Now, the bottom IF group has accomplished nothing. They've made the country much more conservative by having all these conservative laws created in their wake. But you have this other group that decided, people like Joschka Fischer and others who were radical when they were younger, but joined the parties, created the Greens Party the Green Party, and in the late 80s and the late 90s, they were able to achieve such a level of support, 10-15% of the population, that they were able to form a coalition government with the other left-wing party, the major party, the SPD. And when George Bush came knocking in 2002 saying, we want to go to war in Iraq, they said no.
Right.
And they said, we're not going to go to war. And it was because they were in this coalition, and the Green Partners said, we don't want this to happen. Now, it's important to note, in 1968 and 67, there was millions of Germans in the streets rioting, saying, we don't appreciate what our government is doing, supporting America and the Vietnam War. 30 years later, there was a million Germans in Berlin streets. And what were they doing? They were saying thank you to their government for not supporting the war. And that was a hell of a turnaround. And that was entirely because this other group, this other thread, chose to ignore the path that Bader Meinhof took and take a different path. Rudy Dutschke's kind of long marched those institutions.
Richard, we were almost out of time. Richard Huffman is my guest. He's the creator of Richard Huffman, HUFFMAN.com. And we're talking about the film, The Bader Meinhof Complex. Everything you want to know about the Bader Meinhof group is at Richard's site. You can go to RichardHuffman.com or also BaderMeinhof.com with a hyphen in between the two names. I bet you can put anything into Google. Or you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, I should say Werbe, since we're talking German, right, which is advertising.
And I'd be Richard Hofmann.
There you go, W-E-R-B-E. But real quickly, I thought you were going to say the controversy was that the main people in the group committed suicide or in prison, although certainly it's been charged by the left ever since that they were suicided, essentially that they were executed inside of the prisons. And Eureka Meinhof hung herself, but the other three shot themselves with weapons.
Two shot themselves and one
hung themselves,
and
right.
One attempted to stab herself through the heart. It's crazy. This was a prison block that was described as the most secure prison block in the world. And it was, and they spent millions of dollars building this prison block and guarding it. Yet, in the space of one night, we're led to believe that not one, but two guns, in fact, had been smuggled into the most secure prison block in the world, and these people had committed suicide. Now, to me, from what I've read, it's fairly clear they did, in fact, commit suicide. But the movie hedges, and I think it's probably appropriate. They say, here, we're going to show you what's possible. We weren't there. We didn't see them kill themselves. But we're going to show you that they could, that they did, in fact, smuggle guns into prison. They did, in fact, have a reason to do this, and we'll do this. So we're going to show you what's possible. Now, it's important to know the guy who wrote the book that the movie is based on, he hedged initially, but his latest version of his book, he comes right out and says, no, this is definitely a suicide, and the more I've looked into it, it clearly was. But that said, nobody's ever going to know, and it's just like 9/11. There's all kinds of crazy conspiracies that go along with it. The group themselves made it very clear that if we have nothing else to fight for, the one weapon we have is suicide and maybe claiming that it's not suicide. In other words, we want our effects to linger. So they made it clear that if they ever did commit suicide, they were going to do it under questionable circumstances. And that's what happened.
Let me cut you off right there. And so that there's two very, very productive routes to go to find out more about this. Richard Huffman has been my guest. He's created Bader Meinhof. That's with a hyphen in between the two. BaderMeinhof.com. If that's a hard one to remember, if you don't write while you're driving, Richard Huffman, HUFFMAN.com. Or you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. The movie, extraordinarily powerful, extraordinarily disturbing, a wonderful portrayal of an awful period in history for Germany. And it's called The Bader-Meinhof Complex. It'll be at the main theater beginning this Friday, September 18th. Richard Huffman, thank you so much for joining me on The Peter Werbe Show.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Do you owe taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? What will you do? Your tax problem will only get worse if you don't do something about it. If you owe the IRS or state at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Pick up the phone and call 1-800-493-8157. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debts for less than you owe. Remove penalties and interest, and get the tax collector off your case. As an honest, hard-working American, you do have rights. Don't let your tax problem get worse. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
Attention. Hydralyze is currently seeking participants with dark circles and puffy eyes. If you have dark circles or bags around your eyes due to heredity, fatigue, or aging, you are eligible to see results and participate in the Hydralyze trial. Hydralyze was introduced to improve delicate skin around the eyes and now has been shown to eliminate dark circles and bags. It effectively diminishes even dark circles caused by heredity. To participate in the Hydralyze trial and see results risk-free, call 1-800-496-2620. Fragile capillaries around the eye can leak, allowing blood to pool beneath the skin like an ugly bruise. But right now, you can join the thousands of people who have seen their dark circles fade away, watched as bags literally disappeared from view. Participate in the free trial by calling today. If you're serious about getting rid of your dark circles or bags around the eyes, you are eligible to participate and experience results with Hydralyze. Call this number today, 1-800-496-2620. Once more, that's 1-800-496-2620.
Ladies and gentlemen,
all right, listen up.
Back to the Rock 101 WRIF, everything that rocks.